Tonight's edition of Outwit, Outplay, Outlist, talking about the best juror speeches of all time, is sponsored by our friends over at Word Forest, who encourage you to download Word Forest for free today and get ready to flex your brain muscles. Keeping your body in shape is important, but it's also important to keep your mind in shape. I've been leveling up my focus with Word Forest. Word Forest is one of my favorite games. It's a word puzzle app, and it's free. Word Forest is an app made for word search addicts. We had one of those in Survivor of the Amazon. Connect letters in any direction to form hidden word matches at over 2,000 levels, so you can never get bored playing. It starts easy, but it gets harder as you get better. It's fun. Find as many words as possible to earn bonus coins to uncover hidden words. Word Forest, it's a relaxing game with a nature setting and a great way to keep your mind sharp and grow your vocabulary. Put yourself to the test in this fun and addicting brain game. Right now, Word Forest is offering you 2,500 coins and 500 gems when you download and play. Great way to keep your mind sharp for when you are faced with a word search in a Survivor Immunity Challenge. Stop mindlessly scrolling through social media and keep your mind sharp. Just go to the Apple or Google Store and search for Word Forest. Download Word Forest for free today and get ready to flex your brain muscles. Yes, that's right. Rob Cicerino back here with you for another Outwit, Outplay, Outlist, where we take a look at the arbitrary and the reductive of Survivor history. Tonight, we're going to take a look at the greatest Survivor juror speeches of all time. And here to take us through it, the man who is the master of lists. Here he is. Give it up for Mike Bloom.
So happy to be here, Rob. Ready to welcome Triple O back to 2021. I am wearing black in honor, of course, the famous Marquesan jury survivor dress code, but also to be a bit in mourning because we are discussing what I will genuinely call a lost art form in the form of the Survivor jury speech.
Yeah, we missed the jury speeches when I was going through Redemption Island as we've been doing the all-time season ranking. I was like, oh, I like these. I like this better. I miss this. We're going to hear from a number of different jurors over the course of Survivor history. And here to go through with us, it's a true leader. Grace Leader is back with us. Grace, how are you?
I'm doing great. I wore black by accident tonight, that's good. I'm excited. Really a lost art. We don't see the jury speeches anymore. But I always have a little bit of jury. I always wanted to do jury duty. I want to do jury duty. I think it'd be great. You get some time off work. You get put up in a hotel. It'd be great. So very excited to talk about the jury tonight.
Okay, so we are going to be bringing you how many different juror speeches, Mike? Around 20?
20 with an asterisk.
Okay.
Intrigue. Gotta throw in some surprises here.
Some intrigue.
Technically 20, but I might have done some Kalish math on this.
We'll be putting them into four different tiers and coming away with a solid list at the end of this show here tonight. Also, I mentioned I was watching Redemption Island last week. It's Survivor Thailand, the 38th best season of Survivor. I'm currently up to episode 8 in my Thailand rewatch. Don't ask me how it's going. I will be talking about that tomorrow.
Are you 150 to 200% satisfied with the season?
We'll talk about it.
So no Thailand spoilers tonight. Only up to episode 8.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Good. We'll be talking about the Thailand this week on our all-time season rankings countdown. An all-star panel joining me to talk about Thailand. David Bloomberg, Sasha Joseph, and Chappelle will join me to break down Survivor Thailand on Wednesday night. We'll be doing that every single week on Rob Has a Podcast as we are counting down the all-time greatest season rankings. But that is not a tier list. That's what we're here to do today, to go through it all and walk away with our four tiers. This is the fifth of our list podcast. Mike, Could you rattle off our list that we've already done in this series?
Well, I am the master of lists, as you have coined me in the beginning of this. So yeah, we started, of course, with product placement. We then moved on to covering survivor immunity necklaces, individual immunity necklaces. We then went on to noticeable hats over the course of a survivor. And then we finished off 2020 by covering, of course, famous survivor voting confessionals. And now we're sort of staying in the tribal council set, but we're moving to a different place in the set. We are going to the end of the Survivor season, when back in the day, for the first 33 seasons of Survivor, jurors were given the opportunity to singularly address the finalists, and it has produced some of the most infamous moments in not only Survivor history, but television history at that.
Grace, what makes an iconic Survivor juror speech for you?
So for me, I think this will be interesting, because I think memorable and whether I liked it are maybe two different things, because a lot of jury speeches, I think the most memorable ones have a bit of zing to them, have a little heat, they're not too happy with one of the finalists. So I think that's probably where the most memorable ones are. Those are probably not the ones I love the most. So it'll be very interesting to go to see what we have in store for us. But I feel like anything that's different, out of the ordinary, is where we sort of see some of our most memorable jury speeches.
Mike, I want to make sure that I have this correct. So give me the exact verbiage of what kind of jury speech are we looking for today? Best, most memorable?
I think we're going with memorable. I mean,
memorable.
I'm going to be upfront here with one particular omission. You know, I'm going to save people a YouTube comment or an at. Because we are going to include maybe some more contentious one. There is one that I wasn't going to include. We won't be talking about Take Out Your Teeth on this podcast.
Oh.
Because I think the other ones, even the ones that are a bit more fighty, at least have some fun aspects to it. There's nothing fun to talk about with that. It is ugly.
Well, then don't call the list memorable. Then it's got to be the most fun jury speeches.
Okay, well then, Rob, if you want to include it, we can include it. I'll throw it in there as a last minute.
Put it up. I say put it on the list. I mean, I don't shy away from this stuff.
Okay, then all right, I'm gonna throw it in then.
Grace, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, it is one of the most memorable jury. I hope this is the most memorable list. It's the most memorable jury speeches. It is. I mean, yeah, some people get very uncomfortable with it. I think, you know,
we could call this best and then say it's bad. It's bad.
Yeah.
Say it's goodbye.
Spoiler alert. That's going to be the bottom of the list for me, but I am more than happy to put it on as a last minute entry there, Rob.
Yeah. I want to talk about I don't want to make you uncomfortable, Mike, if you don't like to talk about it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't care. I wanted to make sure that we were all comfortable with it, and I assume that we weren't. We're all comfortable with it. We can get into it then.
Yeah, but listen, that Dawn taking her teeth out at Tribal Council is not even in my top 10 million things I'm not comfortable talking about.
Oh, I'll only do it if I get to keep my teeth in.
Yes, that's fine.
Oh, okay. Well, see, that was the thing, though. I wanted to make sure that we all had our teeth in.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, right. Okay. All right. And everybody knows that we are anti-denture shaming.
I just wanted to make sure. That's because, again, I don't know
saying.
Where we all stood on this.
Yeah, come on. All right. We're here to, you know, that look, we're talking about important juror speeches. This is
Mike plays the clip. We start clapping, applauding.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, finally, someone's speaking for us.
Brenda. Yeah. Okay. We stand. All right. So, Mike, where do you want to start off our list?
I mean, here's the thing. We are going to go in chronological order here.
Ooh, okay.
And of course, listen, I'll be honest, this is going to be 3 minutes and 30 seconds of us shutting the hell up, but we need to and bow down to the queen, because where the hell are we going to start this thing talking about memorable jury speeches without starting with Rob? Once upon a time, you had her very speech memorized in your heart. Let's start with Sue Hawk here.
I have no questions. I just have statements. Rich, you are a very openly arrogant, pompous human being. But I admire your frankness with it. You have worked hard to get where you're at, and you started working hard way before you come to the island. So with my work ethic background, I give that credit to you. But on the other hand, your inability to admit your failure without going into a whiny speech makes you a bit of a loser in life. Kelly, the rapping persona queen, who did get stomped on national TV by a city boy that never swam, let alone been in the woods or jungle or rode a boat in his life. You sucked on that game. Anyways, I was your friend at the beginning of this, really thinking that you were a true friend. I was willing to be sitting there and put you next to me. At that time, you were sweeter than me. I'm not a very openly nice person. I'm just frank, forward, and tell you it the way it is. Have you sit there next to me and me lose $900,000 just to stomp on somebody like this. But as the game went along and the two tribes merged, you lied to me, which showed me what the true person that you are. You're very two-faced and manipulative to get where you are at anywhere in life. That's why you fail all the time. Interesting. So at that point of the game, I decided then just to go out with my alliance to my family and just to hold my dignity and values in check and hoping I hadn't lost too many of them and play the game just as long as possible and hang in there as long as possible. But Kelly, go back to a couple times Jeff said to you, what goes around comes around. It's here. You will not get my vote. My vote will go to Richard. And I hope that is the one vote that makes you lose the money. If it's not, so be it. I'll shake your hand and I'll go on from here. But if I were ever pass you along in life again, and you were laying there dying of thirst, I would not give you a drink of water. I would let the vultures take you and do whatever they want with you. There's no ill regrets. I plead to the jury tonight to think a little bit about the island that we have been on. This island is pretty much full of only two things, snakes and rats. And in the end of Mother Nature, we have Richard the snake, who knowingly went after prey, and Kelly, who turned into the rat that ran around like the rats do on this island, trying to run from the snake. I feel we owe it to the island's spirits that we have learned to come to know, to let it be in the end the way Mother Nature intended it to be, for the snake to eat the rat.
And the first mic drop.
50 million people just went ablaze. And I, you know, there's a lot of talk about obviously the first season of Survivor and like what made it catch on. But I think Snakes and Rats was truly part of Survivor's staying power as an inimitable TV moment.
Mike, what's your story of being there for watching that? You were watching in season one and you were watching live, I presume.
Yeah, so I was watching with my sister, my mom, and my aunt in our basement in the summer of 2000. I think it was like August 21st, 2000, I want to say. We were watching it, and that was certainly a moment where, I don't know, I think the reality of the reality show kind of set in, because there were certainly, you know, Sue is not one to mince words. There was some negativity going on with the show. But really, when people were voted out, up to that point, no one had really like been able to come back and vocalize like, man, that sucked. I felt really betrayed by it. And this was the first opportunity for people to do so as part of the jury. And one of them took full opportunity of that opportunity to say, yeah, I was really pissed off that you voted me off. And here's why. And it was definitely one of those defining moments of the show and one of the most defining moments of reality TV. And then I think, you know, one of the ways we remember reality TV is its contentiousness, right? Is its conflict. And I think when you think about that, Snakes and Rats is the first one that comes to mind of here is someone who Sue just met Kelly a month and a half ago, and she is telling her that she would let the vultures take her and do whatever they want with her if she ever passed her by on the street. That is the power of reality.
Yeah. Grace, thinking back to this night in this moment, probably top 30 night of my life.
Top 30?
Yeah, I think so. I don't want to be too hyperbolic, but if I had to make a list, like I think I'd get there in the top 30.
It was so big. I mean, it's funny to think of how like long, I mean, talking about how long Survivor's been on, but yeah, I think, you know, I think it was an interesting point, Mike, when you talk about this is the first time you see people get to sort of talk back after they've been voted out. And it's such like a pressure valve release moment of like people getting to like, finally say what's on their mind. I think in more recent seasons, we've seen the jury's a little bit more animated, but I feel like at the beginning, it was like very much like you stay there and you be quiet and you're here to listen and then make an informed decision. And then they finally get to speak and it's like, oh, here we go. I think that's why so many moments are so fraught with like conflict. But yeah, I mean, it's such a huge moment, especially this is around the time of like water cooler moments is still a thing, right? It's like I would watch this with my mom as well. We used to do like Survivor Sunday parties where we would have Sundays on the Survivor finale night. And then just the next day you'd go into school and they'd talk about,
well, it used to be on a Sunday a lot also.
Yeah, that's why we'd have Sundays, because it was on Sunday.
Yes.
Yeah, I think actually your season, Rob, was the first one to not have it, the finale, on a Sunday, I believe.
Oh, it was on a Sunday.
Well, you know what? Maybe I was thinking of it's Cagayan is the one, because I remember that it always used to air on Mother's Day. Mm-hmm. And Jeff always used to make call outs at the reunions. Mm-hmm. But as we sort of segue our way into the tier list here, it's tough. You know, I don't know if I wanted to roll out the high bar. But
no, you
I do
did it perfect. You did it perfect.
I think it's a high bar.
Because I think that what we're doing here, as Mother Nature intended, that we have the best one, that this will be number one. And with no ill regrets, this is setting the tone for everything else. Nothing else on this list will beat it. This will be number one. But I think it's also important because every other jury speech, especially any contentious one, is trying to live up to this. Grace, I think it's so interesting that, you know, a lot gets talked about how like Richard won the first season. What would have happened if Kelly would have won the first season? But what would the final tribal councils have looked like if Sue didn't give this speech in the very first Survivor finale?
Well, I think the fact that she, I don't know this because I kind of, in preparation for this, I didn't watch a whole ton of speeches because if I thought it was going to be more memorable. So, but in she sort of just comes up and says, I'm not asking a question. I'm making a statement and this is my statement. And it's this like, I think, as I said, I don't love the like, you know, sometimes when they get more mean. But I think the fact that this is so like artfully done in a way, at least the end of this speech, whether, you know, the vultures can take you away, is that artful? I don't know what vultures do other than eat you. So I don't know what else she's thinking. Yeah, they can do whatever you want with them. But yeah, for her to have this like snake and rats metaphor to tie it all together. And I think coming from someone who like Sue, you don't expect her to be like this wordsmith as well, is why this is like so, it's so memorable. And again, yeah, everybody trying to live up to it and maybe not hitting the nail on the head, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and it slaps the entire way through, quite literally or verbally as well. Like, you think, okay, it's just the snakes and rats part of the speech that we always remember. We talked about this, Rob, during the voting confessionals, right? That, like, sometimes there's a really meaty part of it and it sort of is, like, filled out by a bunch of other fluff that we don't necessarily remember. But, like, from the beginning, even when Sue sort of is digging into Richard before ultimately promising him her vote, like, it's still pretty damn memorable. And especially when she segues into Kelly, the rafting persona queen, talking about how she sucked on that day because she got beat by City Boy, who can't even swim. Like, it's just all absolutely incredible. It had to be played in full. I'm so glad it was played in full on the screen as well, because that was also, it felt, I don't know, I don't know if there was any sort of extended edition, to use some Lord of the Rings parlance, when it comes to Sue Hawk's speech, but it definitely felt like they gave time for that to breathe, because even the producers knew this was going to be a seminal moment for the season and the show.
It's also a all-time great TV monologue I think that it's got to be a, if not top 10, right there for all-time monologues on TV.
Yes? I will admit, I went to theater school.
Yes.
And I was looking for monologues to do. There was like a neuron fired off in my brain. One fleeting electronic impulse at one point in my teendom said, could you get away with doing the rats and snakes speech? But I feel like that was too mainstream in like the mid-aughts. As maybe nowadays it would become more like interest, like, oh, what is that? What is that from? Like, you know, oh, Snakes and Rats in Borneo, the hit, you know, Edward Albee play. You'd be able to get away with it. But I feel like going forward with that would be maybe a bit too much. Like, okay, I see what you're doing here and I'm not buying it.
Doesn't get
and
enough
Rob,
credit.
You said this is like a top 30 night of your life. Is this the moment from the episode as well? That's like
everybody was going nuts. You had this. You had the tie vote in the Borneo finale. You have ultimately when Richard wins and everybody is going crazy. It was just so wild. Like, I can't believe this happened. Just a totally just very visceral memory for me the entire night that goes on during the Survivor finale. It was incredible.
Yeah. And to the point where, like you said, Rob, I mean, we're going to have, I think, definitely some Sue imitators. But even go forward to next season, she is not on the list, but Marilyn Mad Dog Hershey makes a reference to Sue Hawk's speech within the program. Mm-hmm. That shows how much that has transcended the show, that, like, despite all the stuff they probably cut out of season one references in season two, they still kept that in to be like, yeah, we know this is a big moment for the series, not just for jury speeches.
And I love Sue Hawk, and I don't have a lot of great memories from my Survivor All-Stars experience, but getting to spend 12 days with Sue Hawk was fantasy camp. I loved it so much.
Did she ever call you manipulative?
No, but I always got along really well with her. Like, I know that she can be like a tough, persona to deal with for some people, but I always got along great with her. And it would have been my dream if she would have, like, cursed me out like she did to Keller. If she would have just gone off on me. I would have loved that.
Yeah, I mean, definitely different Sliding Doors universe where you and her make the final tribal council, Rob, and she's able to deliver on Snakes and Rats 2.0. I don't know what the Panamanian version of that is.
It would be fantastic. All right, let's just rank this number one and then go on as we would do. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. I mean, so this is the gold standard. This is not even gold. This is platinum, baby. Like, this is what we're like, how does this compare? Does it compare relatively nearby, or are we far away in terms of distance?
Okay. All right. So here we go. My screen is very dark. It's hard to tell with this.
That's not Sue. I think Sue is on the third.
Yeah, Sue is on
the fourth. Yeah, right beside Tom, I think.
Left of Big Tom.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, Rob, I did include it. If you want to reload the page while we're doing the next clip, I did include the Brenda photo in there nearby, so we can get a fresh new template for it, and hopefully she's a bit lighter in tone.
Make a brand new start. Okay.
Exactly.
All right. Here we go. So there we go. There is the great Brenda Lowe. All right. So there you have it. That is our round one is in the books. All right, Mike, that's the easy one. Now our work begins.
So we're still staying in Borneo here. And this is where a little bit of my cheating comes into play. Because for the first time, Rob, we are going to do a twofer here. We are
twofer.
Going to have two people in one clip, because this is a question that transcends seasons. And more context to come up that in a little bit, but you'll understand once you hear exactly where we're starting with. Again, we're staying in Borneo. And of course, here comes that weird little dude, as I told him last time, Greg Buis comes back in true Greg fashion to quiz Rich and Kelly. And, you know, again, people had the opportunity, as Grace said, to ask about their games. Some people, like Sue, use an opportunity to sort of get their, you know, 10 pieces of silver, their pound of flesh. Here's Greg, just asking one simple question.
Rich, Greg, choose a number between 1 and 10.
7.
Kelly, a number between 1 and 10.
3.
Character is character.
All right.
Character is character.
That's the original. And now we're going to fast forward 15 years, 30 seasons, to one of the people who was asked that very question and said 4. Kelly Wigglesworth is going to approach a final tribal council in Survivor Cambodia, her first time as a juror. And this is what she has to say. It might sound a little bit familiar.
15 years ago, I was sitting right there. I lost by one vote. My fate was determined by one simple question. Jeremy, Tasha, Spencer, pick a number between 1 and 10.
Right now?
2.
3.
4.
Thanks.
So for the first time in Triple O history, we're going to be judging these two together. This is a package deal, a 2-for-1 in a true numbers fashion.
So I really did not remember that Kelly did that in the Cambodia finale. I do have some news coming up of that. I'm recording a Talking T-Bird this week with the aforementioned Kelly Wigglesworth.
So I'm interested
to know, like, much, because it's always been said that Greg really, you know, he said pick a number, but he always was going to vote for Rich. Did Kelly have her mind made up?
Because Jeremy, I mean, we can even talk about the number picking strategy in this, because Jeremy is terrible and picks 2, unless he's just counting the number of children that he has at that moment, and with one on the way. Like, otherwise, if the number is 1 or 2, otherwise you're going to lose pretty much, right?
Is it Price is Right rules? Is it whoever is the closest? I mean, it's possible that, I guess Tasha comes in and does the Price is Right of like one number and, higher, but then Spencer
one-ups her as well and completely goes in. Because I'm assuming it's Price is Right rules. That's what happened with Kelly Goldsmith, right? In Survivor Africa was like, oh, she went with Ethan because he got closer to the graduate number than Kim.
Mm-hmm. Grace, what do you think?
Do I think whether Greg was lying about the number or whether Kelly
was? I think Greg always was going to vote for Rich, no matter what it was.
Especially in rewatching Borneo, you can see that the connection that Greg and Rich have in particular through their limited time together is like supersedes any sort of superficiality.
Mm-hmm. My bet would be that Kelly genuinely picked the number. But it is, you know, it is interesting. I mean, Jeremy got a clean 10 votes in that season. If he was, you know, if he didn't guess the number right and Kelly was truthful, wouldn't have been a perfect record. What a blemish on his record, Jeremy's record.
Because I feel like Kelly did not really care for Spencer, like from my recollection of that season. Mm-hmm. It's been a while since I watched any from Second Chances. And then I don't know if she had a kind of relationship with Tasha. The jury was very pro Jeremy. So it's interesting.
Yeah. So this is another one that I think does have echoes to it, much like Sue's speech, but in a very different way, right? I mentioned Kelly Wigglesworth brings it up. I believe Shane Powers uses it in Survivor Exile Island as well. So this is actually a pretty important one as well, and it might be looked on as sort of flighty in the moment, as was true to Greg's character. But this is another one that has been used as an example multiple times throughout Survivor history, including by the very person who got it asked to her in the very first Final Tribal Council.
Okay. I think for the sake of the list, tell me if I'm off base here, Greg. I think we should be looking at this as Greg's question. I don't know if the Kelly question necessarily helps it in terms of like hers is not memorable in that it was only 5 years ago and I didn't even remember that it happened. What do you think?
Sure. I mean, to me, it is about Greg's. Greg creates it, and then I think it's fun that there's like an echo that Kelly literally years later does it, even though she arguably didn't guess correctly. Mm-hmm. It's interesting that she uses that question. I love it for the sake of like it's. Especially when you compare it to like Sue giving this like dramatic, long speech, and then to just have Greg come up and, you know, it's someone's like $1 million is up for grabs and you're expecting that you're going to get this like moment to like plead your case to someone and he's just like pick a number. It's all, you know, it's just based on luck. To me is hilarious. And it's so memorable. It's so good.
And this is why it's so sad that we've eliminated jury speeches, right? Because someone could go up now on like Survivor 41 and be like, okay, bubblegum in a dish. And there's enough people now that like that could be a legitimate, you know, high stakes mission to see who wins $1 million.
Okay. All right. Let's look at the list and see where we want to place this. Okay. All right. So right now, Greg's pick a number. Forget you. Go home. Goodbye. I think it should not be in the bottom tier.
I agree. I'm wavering right now because I do not think it's not going to touch that top tier of Sue Hawk. I wonder if the legacy of it, though, puts it in My Life is Fine for me personally. I do take a lot of stock in the reverberation of the Kelly moment. That means something to me. And the fact that none of these other ones really have a lot of follow up to it makes it really unique from that perspective.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that, I mean, again, it's like, are we ranking the best, or are we ranking the most memorable? Because it holds a lot of stock for memorable.
I think it should be the best. Really good.
Okay. I mean, I still think it's I think in that first season, especially when the show sort of took itself so seriously, that for Greg, like, I bet they were so, I wonder how, like, furious they were that Greg didn't have a real question.
I don't think they cared.
No, you don't think they cared? Anyway, I love it. I think it's great. Yeah. I would put it in the second tier, but I wouldn't be.
All right, let's start it there and see where it goes.
Sure. We reserve the right to move these around at any time. If this is your first trip to the rodeo about Widow playout list, these results will vary.
Just to get my thoughts on the record for this, I think it's more historically significant than I do think it is a great moment. That I think that, especially that they did end it they showed us three votes for, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, they showed us three votes for Rich, three votes for Sue, and then Greg asks, pick a number, and then that's what it came down to, right?
Yeah, I do believe that they showed everyone's voting confessionals in full, or not in full necessarily, but we showed who they were voting for except for Greg, and then so that was the big reveal there. And, you know, there was no Jeff Probst takes it and goes on a helicopter. There wasn't even 3 minutes of pomp and circumstance. We went right there to reveal who that seventh vote was.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Before you get a misread in the comments, it was three votes for Kelly.
What did I say? Sue?
For Sue, yeah.
Okay. All right. People in the comments, you know what I'm talking about, okay?
Yeah,
all right, you know.
There's a lot of names going on.
Sue wasn't in the final two, all right?
Yeah.
All right?
Well, actually, it wasn't Sue, it was Kelly. Graduate expert.
That's a fantastic impression. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to bring that more to 2021.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That's the people that correct in the comments when it's obvious. You know what I meant. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Let's jump a couple of seasons forward here, and we did spoil his appearance here with Rob sort of seeking out Sue's image amongst the people that we're going to be talking today. Big Tom has a couple of memorable jury speeches that we could touch upon. I chose personally to go with his question from Survivor
Shapira
Africa.
Representing tonight.
Exactly. Shapira's going to represent in many, many ways. I went with his question from Survivor Africa because, again, we're three for three in terms of true trademark speeches to the character proper. Only Big Tom could ask a question like this to Kim and Ethan.
First of all, I want to congratulate both of you for making it this far and just getting there, because it's a great accomplishment. So I've got to ask you a question, and I will. In camp, I lost a little bit of weight, and it was because of the mush. Ethan, if a hyena came through camp and eat our mush, and then after he ate it, he turned around and licked his hind end, did he do it because that was animal instinct, or because to get the taste of the mush out of his mouth? What do you think?
I just love his what do you think? He's some sort of kids TV show host.
Mm-hmm.
I would watch the Big Tom TV show.
So I wonder, and I know Big Tom a little bit. I wonder if how many libations are going on at Ponderosa.
Considering that, I'm pretty sure he only wore the overalls to Final Tribal Council, and that's it. I think he's feeling hot and steamy at this point. I can imagine he wants to cool himself down with many, many beers.
Mm-hmm. In terms of, just how coherent, Tom's words are, I feel like that in listening to Tom, that is definitely borderline. I wonder.
I thought he sounded pretty good. I thought we might need subtitles.
Maybe he was nervous. He might have been nervous there speaking in front of everybody. Yeah. Memorable.
Certainly memorable. So we talk about Greg, I think, going a bit to the absurd with pick a number, but that's at least a question that people use in their normal everyday lives. Tom sort of comes up with this whole wildlife what if, essentially trying to create, I don't know, some sort of morality test for the final two and decides to present it to them.
So I do think that there is a theme here between the Tom question and the Greg question. I think in both cases, this was a predetermined conclusion. There was no answer that Kim Johnson could have given, which would have swayed Tom's vote from Lex. There was no answer that Kelly Wigglesworth could have given to have swayed Greg's vote. So I think that when somebody's mind is already made up, they're like, all right, how outlandish can I go here? What can I do that would be crazy? I'm just going to have fun.
Yeah, these are people who wanted to be on a reality show. Mm-hmm. And when they already have their decision made, it's like, oh, I have the stage. Okay. And for Big Tom, it was asking about a hyena licking its butt. So.
Yeah, he doesn't need any information.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, that does beg the question, though. Let's poll the panel here. If a hyena does wander into camp, eat the mush, and then lick his own butt, was he going to his own natural animal instincts, or was it to get the taste of the mush out of his mouth?
How far after the original eating the mush is it? Because
you might be getting some mush.
Yeah, a dog is known to, you know, eat dog feces.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel like if my mind is as animalistic as a hyena's, which is probably not that far off, I have an immediate impulse brain, right? I'm like, oh, I better do this thing or else I'll forget mm-hmm. about it. If I have an itchy butt and I just finished eating, I'll be like, oh, sure. Yeah, let me just go scratch that. Like, mm-hmm. I'll take care of that because I know if I forget about it, then I'm going to wander away and I'm going to have an itchy butt next time I reach another oasis. And I will have completely forgotten about the opportunity that I could have taken to bite at it.
Yeah.
But also, what I'm saying is that if you wait too long, then the mush is going to digest. And then when you do that, it's going to taste like mush. So you don't, you know, you got to do it right away.
Yeah. I think it's just an animal instinct.
All right.
Yeah. Because a hyena will probably lick its hind end even if it didn't eat mush.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, this is more of a comment on like, oh, look at the bad cooking that's going on at this camp. My own butt tastes better than that cooking. But yeah, I don't know necessarily if hyenas are really arbiters of taste in that regard, unless it was reviewing. If this was the food critic stopping in at the Moto Maji camp to review the mush and just, you know, hated it that much.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, Mike, let's talk about Big Tom and where he should go on the board right now. All right, he said, forget you, go home, goodbye.
Yeah, so, yeah, I like it, obviously. I mean, it's tough because all of these are going to be memorable in some way. And it certainly is unique in that, again, people do not ask what if questions or would you rather types of questions. Nobody asks like sleepover questions at Final Tribal Council. Mm-hmm. So I think definitely at least putting it in Ain't No Hershey Bar, I could possibly be negotiated into My Life is Fine, but I do not think it is Ratchet.
I don't know what else is here yet. I'm fine with Ain't No Hershey Bar. Grace, if a hyena ate a Hershey bar, do you think that would keep it from licking its hind end?
Yeah, it doesn't want to get the taste of a Hershey bar.
Although you're not supposed to give a dog chocolates. I don't know about a hyena.
Oh, yeah, interesting. Do you give animals with like that are dog relatives? Do they have a similar sort of distaste in chocolate?
I don't know. Good question.
I think it's a little too high up for me. I think like you're right, Mike, that like a lot of these are going to be a lot of really memorable ones, a lot of really good ones. But sort of if I think about probably I didn't really remember this. I don't really remember the hyena butt thing. I do remember him going for the high five to Rob in All
Star. Don't be stupid. Could have been a contender here. Though that is also like 5 seconds of his entire speech compared to like this is like a 40-second WTF moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but to me, that's a little bit more. I just think like if we're thinking about the best, I don't know. It's very on brand for Big Tom, but I don't know. I'm fine with where it is.
Yeah,
we'll see what else is coming.
I feel like that forget you go home goodbye is reserved for the worst of the worst.
Okay, all right.
It's not Ratchet, I don't think.
Okay. At least not yet. We'll determine what Ratchet might be later on once we sort of take a view. Again, we're only on like our third speech right now, so we might figure out later. Like, oh, you know what? On second thought, maybe the mush on this one actually did taste a little bit worse than we thought.
By the way, is Big Tom wearing a Ethan from Survivor 40's hat?
Oh, you know what? You should ask him. I believe so. I believe Ethan saw that. He's like, if I put that on my head, then when I chew on my butt, it'll taste like Big Tom.
All right.
All right. Well, let's move on here. Rob,
please.
I apologize. We're going to spoil Survivor Thailand for you.
That's
I know
okay.
you have a few more
I've
episodes.
Seen it before. I've oh, seen it man. Before.
Oh, listen, you're on episode 8. I just wanted to let you know. You've got a few episodes to go, but I think you're going to be looking forward to this one. I'm going to give you a little bit of a preview. Helen Glover
Mm-hmm.
Not very happy when she was voted. Actually, once upon a time, Rob, when you and I talked about best final words, she was part of that, saying, "Break a leg, I mean it," pulling knives out of her back. So let's hear when Helen comes in here. She is raring to go, and only Jared from Kid Nation could have better Shakespeare references than Helen Glover does in the final tribal council of Survivor Thailand.
We spent 37 days together. And I had my mind made up week two who I was going to vote for. But that got ripped right out of my mind the night I left here. I asked you, Brian, point blank, if I was going. Because you and I had that thing going. We had that trust that we'd give the other person the courtesy of telling them. But you and Clay told me Jan was going. And Jan appeared to me really upset that day. And I went to both of you and I said, you know what? I think she deserves to know she's going. And you both looked right at me. And said, no, leave her alone. She knows she's going. Why make her miserable? Knowing full well that you had turned the tables on me. You promised me it was us three going to the threesome, but neither one of you were man enough to tell me. Clay, it doesn't surprise me from you. You lived up to exactly what I thought you were the whole time out there. But Brian, felt like I was living the Julius Caesar play. I wanted to turn around and say, "A tu, Brute?"
Ooh.
You are the epitome of the trashy used car salesman. And I have to tell you, it really hurt. You duped me. You made a fool of me. You strung me along. And you let me sit here and get stunned. So now is your opportunity to tell me why you didn't give me the decency after all that time to tell me. And then follow up with why I should vote for you.
So there's a lot more to that. There's about like 4 minutes more where they're going back and forth. Jeff stopped at one point and be like, "Helen, please let Brian talk." But I wanted to clip out probably the meatiest part of it, which was, of course, "A tu, Brute," and you are the epitome of a sleazy used car salesman.
Yeah.
Can't believe she votes for Clay and Clay goes on. He got snubbed from Winners at War, I feel like. Anyway, sorry. Yeah,
I actually I don't recall. Did Helen vote for Clay or for Brian? She voted for Brian.
She voted for Brian.
Yeah. Okay. So interesting. I like that she referred to their arrangement as a threesome. That she was going to the threesome, which is a different context for Brian.
There's a few like little things that she throws in there.
They're very on brand for Survivor Thailand, I would say. A lot of sexually explicit references.
Yeah. Weirdly sexual season.
Yeah. Okay. So, boy, I like the emotion. I don't really have it as a super memorable. And I'm a big Helen stan. Mm-hmm. Love Helen. So I'm a little conflicted.
So I watched this one on YouTube. It came up in my viewing. And what I found the most interesting about this in terms of like it being a speech is that Brian convinces her like in the speech. Brian's responses, you can see she kind of is like, oh, okay. Like, he's basically saying like, you would have won, basically. He's giving the like, you would have beat me. I had to get rid of you. And so she flips, like you can see it as it's happening that she's like, oh, like he's right. Whether he's right or not, but like, I need to vote for him basically. So that's to me was the most interesting part of this. And I think especially in contrast that she comes in so fiery, she's so mad. She's like, well, Clay, I knew you were like, you know, this is who you were. But Brian, you turned out to be a used car salesman. That's surprising. And then for her to flip, I think by the end of this, like she gets a response where she sort of changes her mind is really interesting to me.
Yeah, there's going to be a theme in some of these tonight that it's going to be like, you're a sleazeball, I'm five of you, but you, I never thought you would do that. Where like, for some reason, one is painted as just like the scum of the earth, and the other one was, you know, very much up in their high esteems until they fell to the scum as well.
I mean, they have a high opinion of Brian for a while into that season, whereas Clay, like everybody had a very low opinion of him from the jump, and he does live up to that in a lot of ways. You know, if he ever like does anything that doesn't come across as just like gross, that they're like, maybe Clay isn't that bad.
Oh, wait a minute. Yeah. Wasn't grody for 5 seconds?
Yeah. Like I had very low expectations of him, but he actually was okay. Was, you know, kind of, somewhat human today.
But Brian, your threesome conduct far untowards.
Yep. Okay. All right. Let's place Helen on the list because I think it's an interesting one. I like the emotion. She's trying to get to something, but it doesn't really come to top of mind as being memorable. If anything, I think that those final words are more memorable than what she's doing here in the speech. But it's not Ratchet. It's not Ratchet.
No,
not bad.
I like her delivery of Et tu, Brute. Like, she's so casual with her Latin. It's like got a nice easiness to it. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
So this isn't. It's not memorable though, right? Like, it's like, is it a? It's the best speech. So was it a good speech, Rob? Did you like the speech when you were listening to it? Did you like it?
I did like it. But I feel like that does it echo through history for me? And I feel like that's sort of like the line of like, yeah, it should be memorable, also should be good. It's probably more good than memorable, but either way, I mean, I feel like you could either have it in front of Big Tom or right behind Big Tom, but I don't think it goes much higher than that.
I put it behind Big Tom because I think at least Big Tom's is maybe a little more enjoyable.
The hind end of Big Tom.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know if that's mush or something else or dirt. Because I think that there's some good stuff in here. I like Rob. I am a Glover lover. I do love me some Helen Glover. But I do agree that I think the final words are more compact. There is some nice spiciness in here, but I would not say it's anything spectacular, especially compared to the three that came before it.
Yeah. Even the biggest Survivor stan out there, Grace, was not quoting Helen Glover at the water cooler on, I'm trying to remember, was this one a Sunday night? I think it was.
I think it was too. Yeah.
On Monday morning.
Yeah. No, I would agree. I don't think it's like the best, but I think when you're talking about like, is it memorable? It's definitely not memorable. So then the other criteria is like, is it good? It's you know, one of the ones that has been chosen, but I think, yeah, after Big Tom, I think it makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Mike, what's next?
Well, we're moving on to, Rob, a season that you're very familiar with. We're moving on to next season. And look, so this technically doesn't count as like a jury speech, more so like an exchange. But you know what? Given the company that we're in, I feel like I had to include it. Here is Heidi approaching Matthew and Jenna to ask a very simple question and maybe dig a bit into a very specific answer that she wants.
I understand that the two of you are trying to outdo each other here, but since we're a part of the jury and we're deciding your fate, I'd like to know if there is a particular person here that would be more deserving to be in your position. And if you don't feel that way, that's fine. If you think you're more deserving than any of us, that's fine, but please explain why.
Matthew. Yeah, I would say that I think Rob deserves my seat because I think he's proven to be an amazing strategist. I am in debt to him forever because without Rob and without his, I would even call it tutelage, there's no way that I would be here today. I would have been wiped out a long time ago. If I had won immunity yesterday, Rob would be sitting next to me. I think that he deserves it more than Jenna.
Jenna.
Unfortunately, I'm going to have to echo Matt and say, Rob, when it comes down to strategical gameplay and just general wealth of knowledge of the game, Rob has all that encompassed into one. So that's my answer.
I mean, just, I think that, is that the only person?
I think they covered it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, Jeff is so good. And that,
yeah.
I think they answered the question.
Yeah. Yeah,
so Rob, you got to talk to me about what was going on in the moment, because we see there's a moment where like you like visibly facepalm. Was that accurate? Were you actually responding?
I mean,
in the
it
moment
would be
there?
Hard for me to remember that. I don't know what made me facepalm more of when that happened or when Dave asks Matthew, so who is your role model? And Matthew says Colin Powell was his role model in the game. And I always imagine, like, what do you think it was like if Colin Powell was watching the Survivor finale?
Yeah.
And I was like,
yeah.
What?
Well, Matthew,
the crazy guy.
For you. We have a fan named Colin Powell who's going to give you $100,000.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was very funny in the real time. Can I say, though, in fairness to Heidi, I've always said this, that she was the player that I was always the most worried about. I just thought that she was so savvy. And while she does not have necessarily like the most like self-awareness as she may come across to others, I always like was the most worried about what she was capable of in terms of playing the game. Like, I just thought she was very sharp. She was willing to do anything. And I felt like that she was the person that I was always the most scared of in the game.
Personally, I wanted Jeff to not cut it off, and then they'd be like, "Well, I guess also Christy." Mm-hmm. And then they'd be like, anybody like, but any like anybody else?
Oh,
well,
you know, Joanna had such like devout beliefs. I really think, and you know what, Ryan Aiken, God bless him.
Yeah, but anybody else?
Well, of course, Jeff Probst and our lovely camera people.
Janet got a raw deal, you know. the wildest thing that happened though at that tribal council was the like Butch goes to go stand up and gives his speech, and he's just he's like, guys, it's such an honor, and then like a giant like tree branch just like cracked and like fell like right where Butch was standing, and he almost gave Butch a heart attack.
The rainforest got revenge against him in more ways than one. So that's what he gets, like, you harvested our brothers, like, end style, we're getting revenge. But this is, yeah, so it's less about, like, Heidi making a jury speech here, and more just about, like, a really, like, textbook comedic exchange where she's like, oh, anybody else? Anybody else you could possibly think of?
Yeah, this is fun. People still remember this to this day. Is there anybody else? So it's good. I don't know how far up on the list did she go.
Yeah, what do you think, Grace?
I think you're right. It's so funny. It's so good, but I don't know. I don't know where it should go on the list. Let's see.
Let's take a look. Okay. Is it Ratchet?
Definitely not Ratchet.
Not Ratchet. Don't talk about Heidi that way. Okay. All right. So is it better than Helen?
I definitely think it's better than Helen. I think it's more succinct and it's more memorable.
Okay. All right. Does it beat Big Tom?
I think it beats Big Tom as well. Considering that again, I think this is a bit more memorable. And I do think, like, you know, we've gotten so many questions over the years of, like, who deserves to sit there. Jerry sort of was doing a very similar fishing type of thing. But, like, this is the one we always remember, right? Like, this is the one that almost killed the who deserves to be sitting there question, because it is so awkward and so comedic.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. Is this as far as it goes?
What do you think, Grace?
I think probably, yeah. Because I don't think it's as memorable. Like, I mean, she wasn't the first person to ask the sort of like who should be sitting here instead of me. That was asked very early on. Because I sort of remember Scoopin got shout outs. I don't know if we're supposed to say his name.
Yeah.
Scoopin got shout outs in Australia because of what happened with him. So it had been asked before. It's just her. That she's so obviously fishing.
Well, yeah. I mean, that was even brought up, I think, in Borneo. I think they're talking about, I think they were talking about, like, Rudy, and I think Kelly mentioned Sonia as, like, someone she wishes were here right now. So, like, yeah, that's been something that's existed since the beginning, but I don't think anyone has been as
good. It is interesting. What's the optimal strategy? Do you just say the person who's asking you the question, or do you say someone who isn't even there? I don't know. I don't know what you even say. It's such a weird question. Yeah, I don't think it goes much further than that. I don't think it's as memorable as the number question.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm fine keeping it here for now, though. Maybe depending on
Mike,
some of the
is there
other...
any other Heidi moments that you think should be on the list?
No, I think that's about it.
Are you sure?
All right, Rob, we got to move on here.
Okay, all right. Just a quick break before we get back to the list to thank our sponsors. I want to thank IP Vanish coming back to the show. What is IP Vanish? IP Vanish is a virtual private network of VPN for short. VPN is a super important tool to help you safely browse the internet. You could use your VPN on computers, tablets, phones, even things like a Fire Stick when you're streaming media. When you use a VPN, all your data is encrypted. So what you're reading, what you're searching, what you're watching, whatever it is you're doing is all encrypted. That's important because what you're doing on the internet isn't any of my business, and it's no one else's business either. IPVanish helps you remain anonymous and secure on the internet. IPVanish starts at just $3.49 a month. For just $3.49 a month or $27.99 a year, you can help protect your online privacy and security with an anonymous IP address. That means your personal IP address can't be tracked by anybody on the web. IPVanish has more than 1,500 servers in 70 plus locations. Get protection using public Wi-Fi as well. Remember, With IPVanish, all your data is encrypted, so no one can snoop on what you're doing. With 24/7 support, you can email them, chat with them, even call them. They are there to help. And if you remember, these guys supported the show a few weeks ago. They've come back with an even better deal, wanting to offer something special for the new year. You're getting 65% off now. Go to IPVanish.com/Rob to claim your 65% off savings. They have plans starting at just $3.49 a month or $27.99 a year. This is the time to sign up. With our discount and their current promotion, you can get a VPN for 65% off their usual offering. IPVanish is the best of the best, even rated 4.7 out of 5 on Trustpilot, and that's with more than 6,000 reviews. Show these guys some love. They're repeat sponsors. Remember, it's IPVanish.com/Rob to get the deal and start protecting yourself online. I also want to thank our friends over at Geico. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work, but you know what's easy? Bundling policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowners or renters insurance along with your auto policy. And that's a good thing too, because you already have so much to do around your home. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com. All right, let's get back to the list.
So we're jumping ahead a couple of seasons here. Look, Survivor All-Stars had a lot of salt going on. A lot of tough feelings.
And there could have
been a lot to pull from here. I decided to go with, of course, perhaps maybe the most, I think Kathy was less so angry, more so disappointed. Lex was straight up angry, and he decided to really reach outside the game in a season that did so as well. So this is Lex in full blue mohawk. This is his speech to Rob and Amber in the final tribal council of Survivor All-Stars.
It's just a game. That's something we probably all said 1,000 times while we were out here. And I'm sure that for both of you, it was an excuse that helped wash away the guilt as you played the game the way that you played it. You know what that phrase, it's just a game, it's a big lie. It's not just a game. For all of us out here, for all of you, it's life. And the line between game and life is not cut and dried. Life blurs into the game constantly. This game exposes who we are as people to the core. It's like truth serum. And I think the way you play this game is representative of the kind of person you are. The hardest lesson I learned out here was about friendship and betrayal. And I think the true measure of a man, what kind of friend he is. What kind of a friend are you, Rob? What kind of a friend were you to me? You asked me to do you a favor, bro to bro, friend to friend. And I did the only thing I could do, and that was to answer the call of a friend in need. You repaid that by putting a knife in my back. As far as this game is concerned, I lost, and you both beat me. No sour grapes, no bitterness. With all sincerity, I will congratulate both of you for being in the final two. But as I see it, as good as your game was, you sold out your values, you sold out your character, and you sold out your friends for a stack of greenbacks. I hope it was worth it, because that money will never be enough to buy it all back.
Hey, believe me, it's worth it.
I got a lot of greenbacks. You ever see season 22?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Lex is keeping it real.
I mean, in many senses of the word, Lex is someone who is extolling a lot of values in this speech, not just about the game of Survivor. He flat out says, this game is life.
Yeah.
And I know that at the time, he got a lot of negative reception. He was probably one of the most disliked contestants from that, all those first eight seasons. And I think it is due in part, I think, due to this conversation, which I think people still to this day feel is just out of bitterness and resentment and too harsh.
Yeah, he really was not received well at the finale of that season. I think it brings up a very interesting dichotomy between Boston Rob and Lex, where Lex says here, this game is truth serum. This game brings out who you really are. What you do in between the lines reveals you as a person. Where in Redemption Island, Boston Rob is asked almost like a similar question by Grant. Like, what won't you do? He's like, hey, when I come here, like, there is no line. Like, but it's just a game. This is who I am when I'm playing the game. And this isn't me. This is not truth serum. This is me playing a game, and this tells you nothing about who I am as a person. So I think that that's like a really interesting philosophical question about Survivor. Does it show you who you really are, or does it, or do you say, oh no, I'm being this person, that I'm being my Survivor self here during these 39 days. You don't know necessarily anything about me. I think I probably come down more on the Lex side. I do think that the game is probably a little bit more the lack of anything, the deprivation, I think really strips you down to the bone of like who you are as a person. And then you become like a more feral version of yourself. And I think that that's probably a truer version of yourself, where in real life, I think we could sort of like hide more behind like the trappings of like different things, where Survivor, I think, can reveal a person more.
I would agree. I agree with that. And I think what's like interesting, what we find interesting about this show is that there are people who can sort of do that Rob thing. And that sort of is them as well, is like they're able to just sort of forget everything else. And I think a lot of it times we see it's like the focus on something that's outside of the game that they're trying to play for. And that's more important than what's happening. Is that this is such a unique experience. Like this also is the first time where anybody is coming back that knows each other. And so there's way more. I don't think people sort of knew the stakes yet or how it was going to be played, in the sense that like people didn't know whether friendships outside the game would then translate to inside the game. And obviously Lex sort of gambled on that they would, and they didn't. I think that's true. I think for most people, Survivor, it shows who you sort of are or amplifies certain things about you. But then we find fascinating those people who can totally, your Tonys, who can sort of turn it all off and think of it as a game, while also sort of being able to relate with you in a way to make you think that it's more than that. I don't know.
And in terms of the audience reception, I think that everything that Lex does here is in bounds at the final tribal council. But I think that the thing about Survivor and the reunion show is you have to, when they cut to you at the reunion show and they say, all right, Lex and Rob, like, you guys are good. Like, oh yeah, classic Rob, yeah, that guy, we're good. And then the audience, we love it. But then when you get to the reunion show and it's 6 months later and you're still the same as you are in the tribal council, audience does not like that.
Well, it was weird. I actually feel like this final tribal council and the reunion, like Lex and Jerry, in my opinion, were saying things that were valid, just not playing in that environment. Because remember that Jerry, storms off the stage because she's saying like, hey, we're not just like characters on a TV show. We're people in the game. We have feelings. Yeah. And everyone's booing her. And then she walks off. And I think that to your point, Rob, I think Lex makes fair points, and I especially think that Lex is sort of, has the right to have this opinion, considering that, to Grace's point, like the place that he and Rob's friendship was at. These were very untested waters of people had never played Survivor before who knew each other. And the fact that Lex had done certain things based on a friendship that he, an alliance outside of the game that he and Rob had, and to have that betrayed struck very personally to Lex. And so it is, it has very similar ire to Sue, but like Sue, this is based in years of friendship, not days.
Yeah. But I also think that it came across as somewhat hypocritical, where, when Ethan was the receiving end, it's like, hey man, this is a business trip. Look, you're my friend, but like, I got to do what I got to do. You've already won. So, I think that, people felt like, okay, I understand this, but also at some point, like, you gotta tip your cap when you get to the finale.
Yeah, sure. Wide brimmed cap that he wore to all those tribal councils, like trucker hat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's a rough season. I feel like that, Rob really gets beaten up at that final tribal council.
I wonder how people, I mean, the idea is that they were bitter, but I just wonder how people would feel if, like, Rob was just able to get that one extra vote, just flip that one thing that Rob is the winner of that season. I wonder how the perception of it.
A lot of stuff changes. Does Rob come back for Heroes versus Villains? Does Rob come back for Redemption Island? It's a whole different can of worms of what Survivor looks like post-season 8 if Rob takes it instead of Amber.
Yeah, I think he does come back for Heroes versus Villains, but I do wonder if he would have been back for Redemption Island, where it's not really an equal playing field, where he's won and Russell hasn't.
Yeah, that's very true. And then they were sort of seen as like, well, they made it to the end and they both lost because of, the people that they cut along the way. So,
But who gets Amber's spot on Winners at War?
Oh, that's a very good question. Yeah, Clay, finally. It's Clay in a wig.
Yeah, I don't know. Is that Tina? Is that the sepia?
Yeah,
interesting.
Yeah, interesting.
So it's safe to say Lex's speech is very memorable. Like, again, I know there's a lot of stuff going on in the All-Stars Final Tribal Council, but I do feel like Lex's, especially maybe it's that look, again, the fact that he is looking like a generic, like, punk bad guy you might see in a video game certainly sticks out as well. So him doing that, along with just his vitriolic words, I think absolutely stands out as probably one of the most, I don't know, one of the most just like pointed jury arguments we've ever had. Yeah, that's very true. As pointy as his hair.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So where does Lex go? This is where I'm starting to look at the board and trying to find patterns here. Mm-hmm, so I feel like that tonally, like, is he with Helen here? I mean, I don't know if it's so super memorable that I would say he's on the level with Sue.
No, but I would settle for my life is fine.
Hmm. Okay.
Because I do think, like, this is memorable. I think it's very evocative of the season, right? And Lex is one of the votes, one of the very key votes in which he does not get to give to Rob and deprive him of those greenbacks. And I do think that this is something that still sticks out to this day many, many years later as, like, one of the most, like, personally based, cutting deep jury speeches.
Also, I believe that was the last time that money was referred to as greenbacks.
I think it was the first time money was referred to as greenbacks. I don't know who else was referring to that besides, like, prospectors.
Yeah, I feel like it's like, yeah, like maybe like 30s gangsters of like, all right, drop off the suitcase full of greenbacks.
I think, yeah, I was in a Home Alone, one of those fictional movies from Home Alone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're like keep the change.
Keep the greenbacks, you filthy animal. So I think that the reason why I'm with Mike here and that it's a little bit up is that I think sort of tonally, yeah, it's the same as Helen. I think memorability wise, it's not super memorable, but I think it's much more fascinating TV in the sense that, like, there's so much history to these two people. There's just so much more to, I think, the story. We're a little bit more invested in this than I think we are with Helen, and Brian. So I think that's why I would move it up. It's just a much more interesting. I know the memorable, like, Lex and Rob thing is the, like, do me a favor. If you can. But yeah, to me, I think that there's so much to this when you rewatch it. It's so, I mean, the Kathy speech, yeah, the Kathy, too. Kathy. She's like saying that Boston Rob is like a son to her. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my gosh, so emotional. Like, and there's just so much there that I think it is hard to watch in a sense. And I think you're right. I think that, like, people sort of want Survivor to be a bit more like a TV show where it's like we can hate these people and, like, in the same way that we hate, you know, Joffrey from Game of Thrones. But it's not so fun when it's a real person. Mm-hmm. We get to do that too. So I think that's why we sort of want that, like, yeah, you know, that makeup moment at the
it's
reunion.
It's supposed to be for healing. That's the idea of, yeah, like, hey, it's like, we're all good now. We all love each other. This is great. Yeah.
Yeah. As if they were like a party characters on an island. Right. So, yeah. So, that's why I think just the weight of it and what's built up to it in the season is why I would put it sort of in that second tier. But
as heavy as a stack of greenbacks.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. So is it good where it is, or should it be better than Greg?
I'm wondering that, you know, because I do think that, again, it's a big moment for me from Lex. I do think that the Greg one is more unique. But I'm trying to balance, like, you know, does the emotional weight of Lex's outweigh the lolliness of Greg and Kelly's echo 15 years later?
See, I kind of feel like that, if anything, I feel like that Greg is more along the lines of Heidi and Big Tom of something wacky that happened, as opposed to it being, like, emotionally very powerful.
Yeah, it's not emotionally powerful at all, picking a number, but that's what's so fascinating about it, right? Is that these people have, like, two people would take totally different approaches.
All right. We don't have to solve this right this second either. Okay,
we'll keep it in mind. We'll put a pin in it, like many pins were put in Lex's head to simulate that mohawk.
I don't think that's how it works.
That's not how mohawks work.
Now you got a mohawk
in your head,
like acupuncture.
Yeah, that's what acupuncture is. You make mohawk. It's like a woolly willy with pins.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
All right. So
Mike,
we're moving ahead here to the very next season, and this is going to draw many comparisons to actually one that we previously talked about in Helen. Suffice it to say, even before searching out a career in politics, Eliza Orlins knew how to address people with a firm point of view. She had a lot to say in season 9, Survivor Vanuatu. I'm just going to play her question because it does go again a bit back and forth once Twyla and Chris actually answer her question. But here is Eliza's question to Twyla and Chris during Vanuatu.
Before I address my question to you, I have a couple comments. Twyla, I'll start with you. Congratulations, you achieved what you set out to do. You came into this game saying you would do whatever it took to get to the final two, and that you did. You were a deceptive, lying bitch throughout this game. You never treated me with an ounce of respect. You didn't even speak to me like I deserved your breath. I might envy your position in the final two, but I do not envy your life. Now, with that being said, I do think you played a good game, and you were outright about it. Chris, you, on the other hand, you shocked me. You shocked me. Whereas I knew Twyla was going to be a deceptive lying bitch, I did not know that you were a deceptive lying bitch, too. You pretended to be my friend. I mean, you stabbed me in the back with the Julie thing, and then you stabbed me in the back again and rubbed salt in the wound. Unnecessary. Blatant lies. My request tonight from the two of you is I would like an apology. Twyla, you first.
So I always remember this one in particular, not just because of the fantastic repeating of the phrase deceptive lying bitch, but because Linda Holmes from Television Without Pity, I believe at the time, like, always used to typify jury questions. And one of them is, my question is, I want an apology, in all caps. I do feel like Eliza sort of invented that here, right? Where she's like, here's my question. Tell me you're sorry.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a good line in this one. I think when it's in the back and forth, and Twyla says, "You just talk a lot," and Eliza goes, "False." It's like, I think maybe you do talk a lot. Yep.
Do we know if the Manhattan District Attorney race has debates?
I mean, it's a great point. I mean, I guess they would have to go virtual either way. But if that's the case, like, I don't even know if Eliza.
Well, I think the race isn't for a while, so maybe down the road. Yeah. I think it's not until June of next year.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, hopefully, maybe that should be her slogan, like, this guy is a deceptive lying bitch.
Yeah, yeah. It'd be great to see Eliza on the debate stage once again. I pity the fools that are running against her.
Yeah, same.
Get the floor mop with them. Okay. So that was wild. That was wild. Yeah. And another sort of like angry Vanuatu Final Tribal Council.
Yeah, there are quite a few, right? I mean, there's Julie, who's more, again, disappointed than angry. And their whole home with Chris is like, I brought your hat. Where, again, Grace sort of like the Brian Hyde thing of like, he instantly turns her jury vote there. I know Sarge is certainly angry with Twyla. So there's, again, a lot of fury flying for the second season in a row. But Eliza's, again, true Eliza fashion, like, very firm, very fiery. I envy your position, but I do not envy your life.
Yeah.
Woof.
Yeah. Anna is correcting me, says it is this year, Rob. I'm sorry. I don't know what year it is, okay? Because I feel like I only talked to Eliza recently and it was next year, but I think in my memory, now that I remember, that was probably like April or May. So
I mean, to be fair, like, you know, we're still dating our checks with 2020, or dating our greenbacks with 2020 at this point. So we're still in a mind back then.
Yeah. It seemed like 2 weeks ago for me when I talked to Eliza. But yeah, now in hindsight, it probably was like 8 months ago. All right. So
this speech has another really good, like, the way to cut someone down. I'm learning if I ever need to cut someone down is to find someone near them and be like, you,
yeah,
he's, and be like, but you, I was not expecting it from you. So another good, you set up one person and then tell the other person how they're even worse, is a great segue. It's really good.
What it's interesting though, is that in both cases, the person who was deemed like the, I didn't expect you to be this person, ends up doing, you know, the used car salesman and the deceptive lying bitch end up winning the day there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The DLB.
Oh, yeah. You down with DLB?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Let me find Eliza here on.
To be fair, they were both DLBs at the end.
That's true. Just so, one was the shocking DLB. One was the more expected DLB.
Okay.
Yeah.
Also, please stop me if I did not get the Eliza. That this is the pictures are very dark at the Final Travel Council. Okay. Okay. This is Eliza.
That is
right?
Eliza.
Okay.
That's Eliza.
Okay. All right. So let's see. It's not Forget You Go Home Goodbye, right?
No, definitely not. I think I'd keep it in Ain't No Hershey Bar because I do feel like Lex's, it still is as angry as Helen and Lex's, but I think Lex's has that je ne sais quoi of like the friendship that I think puts it in that tier above. And I think I could see Eliza's in here, definitely above Helen's. And I guess the question is, how does it relate to Tom and Heidi?
You put her above Helen.
I definitely put her above Helen. Because
Grace,
I think that,
how are you feeling about this?
I would put it above Helen. But again, this is where I was talking at the beginning. This is probably, I mean, Sue saying that she wouldn't give Kelly water is pretty mean. But this is probably the meanest one we've seen so far. And as I said, mean to me is not the most fun always to watch. Mm-hmm. Eliza's entertaining. It's a wild speech. I don't know. I don't know if how much further I would put it up. But I mean, it's probably still more memorable than the other two, like Tom and Heidi here. I don't know.
I would say I might put it above Tom and below Heidi, because I feel like the comic value of Heidi's does supersede Tom. And I feel like the character aspects of Eliza's supersede Tom's, you know, like this feels like a genuine Eliza Orland's original.
Okay.
As opposed to like Big Tom's is funny and goofy. But something like Don't Be Stupid, Stupid is also very Big Tom as well.
So I'm fine with this being in the ballpark, and maybe we could sort it out later as we start to get a little more clarification of like what we're putting where.
All right.
Okay. All right. Mike, what's next? We're going from season 9 to where?
Let's get weird here. Let's go to Survivor.
Chase Rice?
No, unfortunately not. Though, unfortunately, the Dumb as a Bag of Hammers award from Survivor Nicaragua is not going to make the list. Maybe save it for the sequel. We're going to Survivor Exile Island, and we're going to Courtney Merritt, who has some very unique words and metaphors for Danielle and Aris before she sort of peppers them with questions. So this is going to be the preamble to, you know, the actual question and answer period. But here is Courtney Merritt.
Forgot my guns. They've been dropped in the sea of forgiveness. Wow. I came in here wanting to play with integrity and to be of light and love and this shining being. And wow, did I struggle with that? Because you certainly both stabbed me in the back with a knife that was very deep, and it took me about a week to remove it from my back. It was so deep, especially from Danielle, which I had total trust in her. I never was going to vote you out. I don't know who made up that lie, but I'm holding no chip on my shoulder, because chips on your shoulder of regret and anger weigh you down, and I'm a bird, so I gotta fly. But more so than anything, I learned a ton about myself, and that points me to my question. For you, and through this experience, more than the game and the money and the la 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 la, what did you really learn about yourself that you're going to take out of here and walk with every single day?
Oh my goodness.
Listen, I love a metaphor and a simile. I'm a big fan. I love it. That's a lot of metaphor and similes to throw out in like a minute.
She basically ate a poetry book and like vomited it back out. You know, like, yeah, I'm a bird. You can't weigh me down. I dropped my guns in the sea of forgiveness.
But you know what? I kind of miss this where in the new format, it's like, okay, Survivor is like, all right, we are telling you the criteria to vote for people. All right. We have this category. We have this category. We have this category. We're talking about these things at this point, and this is the criteria that you're grading these people. Whereas in the classic format, it's okay, each person is a test, and sometimes now it's an insane person, and now the insane person has a test for you. Can you give the insane person back what they're looking for?
Yeah, can you tell them what you learned that you can walk with, I think is what she's saying, into your everyday life from this experience?
Get that, earn that vote. That's your next test, okay?
Mike, this is great that you're on because I know you have a Survivor tattoo. I'm going to get one of a bird with a gun holster, a chip on its shoulder, and a knife in its back.
Yeah, no, but I would say, but the gun knife. Should be falling into an ocean. Yeah, into a river. Sea of forgiveness.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's quite the speech. Yeah,
Courtney knows how to paint a picture with the word. Granted, it's like Jackson Pollock splatter art, but it is a painting nonetheless.
Okay. All right. I do remember talking about this one from the Evolution of Strategy. I don't remember it being quoted a ton for Courtney. Let's see where we place this one. Okay.
Unfortunately, a visual component has missed out on us just playing the clips because she actually unholsters guns. Yeah. She drops them in the sea of forgiveness. Like, she's actually flapping her wings like a bird. There is so much physicality to Courtney Merritt as well. You know, she's not just verbal.
Mm-hmm. If only Lex and Boston Rob went to a reward challenge at the Sea of Forgiveness, Survivor history would have been different. All right.
Well, that's the person who gave Donathan money, right? The Sea of Forgiveness?
Yeah.
Isn't that the next Survivor season, too?
Survivor Sea of Forgiveness. Is that Courtney Merritt?
That is Courtney Merritt during one of her many poses, the like Dragon Ball Z, I can't believe this is happening pose.
Okay. All right. Is it Forget You, Go Home, Goodbye?
What do you think? What do you think? Like, it is so out there. I could completely see why the two of you might be like, what the hell is this?
No.
This is trash. I could also see, like, this is so out there. It's amazing.
Hmm.
Probably, it's really good. I think it's good, but yeah. I don't think it's...
I'm not like, Courtney, this speech is over. Do not... Why did you say this? I'm not there. So I think it's out of Forget You, Go Home, Goodbye.
Okay, so we're putting in Ain't No Hershey Bar, which is growing by the day, much like a modern-day Survivor jury. So the question is, where does this stack? I mean, I guess we sort of have Heidi and Tom as a sort of like comedic, some intentionally so, some unintentionally so. Mm-hmm. How does Courtney compare?
I feel like she's at the bottom of this so far.
I would say so too. I think that it's very similar to Tom in the sense that it's kind of like just gibberish. Tom's feels so like Tom. I feel like Courtney is just not a memorable enough character for us to be like, oh, that's the Courtney we know and love. Like, it's really ridiculous. It's a really ridiculous speech. But there's something about Tom. Tom's question, I think I would put it higher than Courtney's.
Mm.
I feel like it either could stay here, like whether Helen sort of swaps with Tom or Helen stays where she is, I think.
Well, it's interesting you compare the two because, I mean, you had speculated before as to whether Tom had imbibed prior to his question. Courtney, the script of it very much, you gave a juror a tab of acid before going to final counsel. What would they say off the top of their mind?
Yeah. All right. So, should we leave her here at the bottom of Ain't No Hershey Bar, Mike?
I'm okay keeping her here for now. I could either put her above or below Helen. I do agree with Grace that maybe she's like right below Tom because she rambles so much about this. Mm-hmm. And while that does create the ability to have her come up with more just genuine images worthy of Yates, I do think that, you know, I think that
not
the
Courtney
the anger. No, that's the another Courtney. The anger of Helen, I think, might supersede her for now.
Okay.
I mean, the one thing this speech has going for it has merit.
All right, so let's come back to Courtney, and as we see more of what else is out there, then we'll have a better sense of where the things are tier wise. Okay.
All right, we don't know what the targets are in front of us. We don't know whether to drop our guns yet.
Yeah. All right.
Oh, I forgot mine at the Sea of Forgiveness. Oh my gosh. Okay. We should move on.
All right. We're going to get into another lengthy one here. It's been a while since we had a very lengthy one. But of course, when Lisi Linares is on the jury stand in Survivor Fiji, get your tidy whities on, everybody, because we're going to listen to Lisi's similarly nonsensical jury speech in full here.
All right. Let's see. Eeny, meeny, miny, moe, catch a liar by the toe. If he hollers, let him go. Not really. Eeny, meeny, miny, moe. Cassandra, can I see your water shoes?
Sure.
All right. Those are the worst looking water shoes I've ever seen. It's just telling me that you were completely unprepared to play this game. Would you agree with that?
No, it's day 39 and I'm still here. My shoes are still here. And, you know,
okay.
That's all I can say. I don't see the relevance in the question. I brought up the shoes because you were in over your head. So I'm thinking for 39 days, she made it because greed. I think greed is what really fueled everything. Would you agree with that? Yes or no?
No, I don't agree with that. I mean, I'm not surprised to hear that comment from you. My purpose for being on the island was to prove some things to myself.
So greed never propelled you?
Greed never propelled me.
So what did? What did? Your love of the outdoors?
Of course, wanting to win $1 million like everyone.
Ah. Oh,
and, but what? It wasn't that
Say that one more time.
We all here for $1 million. All right. I didn't think
We're playing. Dreams. I want to know how many zeros there are in a million.
Six. Enough to keep somebody's life running and to help a lot of people.
Say that one more time.
Enough to keep somebody's life running.
The number of zeros?
It's six.
Good. Okay.
Do you think I'm stupid? Let me ask you that question.
It's a question. I'm part of the jury. This is part of my game.
Okay, go ahead.
Just like you play your game and you do what you have to do with the game, I get that opportunity too. Okay, Earl.
I'm going to stop it there because the rest of it's just like, hey, Earl, did you really blindside Yao Man or not? But really, I think the thing we remember is the water shoes and how many zeros are in a million.
Okay.
That was a mean one, I think. I feel like it was very mean.
Yeah, Lisi's coming in hot. Lisi's coming in hot. This is, I think, the Lisi, go home, you're drunk.
Yeah, this is very much like, I don't know what Lisi's taking. Look, if Tom's drunk and Courtney's on acid, God knows what cocktail Lisi has thrown down her throat prior to going into this. Because there's like questions. She's forgetting math. Like what she's intending to do with this.
I think the producer is like, all right, Lisi, do you have questions for tribal council? And she's like, I got this. All right. Well, here I go. And she's coming in with like big Sue Hawk energy, but she does not have the material.
No, she's trying to like pull like a My Cousin Vinny, like trying to like trap them in a logical fallacy, right? Of like, Cassandra, look at your water shoes. Those are clearly the water shoes of someone who is not prepared for this game, you know, to make like the big exhibit A point so that the literal jury will make the decision in her favor.
Yeah.
I love the like, you came here to win $1 million. Like, wow. Like, mm-hmm. showed you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't believe you came here to win $1 million.
In those shoes? Really? Really, Cassandra?
Yeah, I believe that's the only time water shoes have outright been said in Survivor across 40 seasons.
Yeah. And what would happen if Dreams would have got the question wrong? If he says, you think five? I'm like, how could he even win $1 million? He does not even know how many zeros there are. My case is closed.
I missed my case. Thank you. Lisi Linares, LD. Retired.
Yeah, he just has to sign the back of the check. He does not. He has to fill out the deposit slip.
Do they don't have to do a skill testing question?
Yeah,
with you then. There's like the moment where skills dreams.
with a Z.
That's my nickname. That's mine. Where he gets the question right, and then I think because Lisi thought that he was going to get it wrong, then like guesses whether she's. Knows the answer.
What did you just say? Go say. She goes.
Good.
That is right. That's the right answer. Yeah, because I think she thought she would get it wrong, and then when it's six, she's like, maybe it's not six.
This just really shows why I'm glad that Lisi did not find the teaching profession, because I think that would be a very tough classroom to be in.
Could she have been like, actually, there's a decimal point and two zeros after. It's 0 cents. There are eight zeros.
This is why you do not need to vote for this man. You cannot count to eight.
Yeah.
And he tries to make like a nice statement about how much $1 million. And she's like, no, you do not get to make, just no, you don't get to make a nice moment right now.
All right. Here's Lisi. I don't know. This could be ratchet.
I think, you know what? It is not insulting to Lisi, though, because Lisi's kind of a ratchet character and ratchet person. And so I think it's very proper that we put her here in the bottom.
I don't.
Is that
it's
a
not,
lyric from Tidy Whitey's?
Put a ratchet bottom?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. It's not super memorable. Like, it's not super memorable. I mean, like, maybe water shoes is a little bit, but not that much. And I'm thinking, like, what are we going to put in the forget you go is like, what do I never want to see again on the show? I never want to see someone come up and just be trying to purposely like catch them in a lie is not super fun.
Which they completely fail at because they answer all the questions right.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. So, all right. I think Lisi is at home here. Yeah. Forget you. Go home. Goodbye. Most ratchet so far.
Yeah, I think so. And I wonder if, much like during our voting confessional one, that Randy Bailey was the lone participant in Forget You, Go Home, Goodbye, Lisi might be occupying a very similar space by the end of this all.
Okay.
Don't forget your water shoes when you go.
All right, Mike, what's next? We're at season 14 right here.
Yeah, so we're hopping a couple seasons later for a couple of goodies. We couldn't have done this without Natalie Bolton. She has one of the weirdest edits in Survivor history. Absolutely nowhere for the first eight or so episodes of the show goes, as she would say, completely aggro, and all culminates in these words. And I think some people might remember one part of this speech in particular, but I'm going to play it in full because there is a surprising part we may not remember that I think sticks out as well. So this is Natalie Bolton.
Ladies, first of all, you have my respect tonight. Woman to women. Start with you, Parv. You have labeled yourself as a flirt. You're probably the most masterful person in the history of Survivor to play the flirt card, which is great. My question to you is, how does that resonate for you in the bedroom? How do you take that to the next level as far as strategy in the game? How does that translate your layers of being?
Come on, guys. Look, Parvati, do you know what she's asking?
You're a flirt. You flirted with me on several occasions.
Whoa.
I'm not complaining.
You're sexy.
Thanks. So, how does being the flirt parallel to your intimate life?
I think my strategy in this game has been infused with my personality, and being flirtatious is a big part of my personality. At home, it gets me what I want. I'll flirt with girls to get my way, or I'll flirt with guys to get my way, and I think I honestly can develop genuine relationships with people without flirting with them, but it is an old standby, not gonna lie.
Okay. Amanda. Clearly, you're a beautiful woman. You appear to be a very strong woman. Unfortunately, you always had like a glazed over look on your face. I did notice that. My question to you is, was that your strategy to kind of play the zombied pretty girl, not really knowing what's going on, pageant queen cliche? Or is this who you are as a person?
No.
I'll stop it there because Amanda goes into her answer. But I personally have forgotten that obviously the whole resonate with you in the bedroom thing is what Natalie's remembered for. I forgot that she was the one that called Amanda Kimmel a zombie.
That old trope, that cliche, the zombie girl.
Are you actually a zombie?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what Natalie Bolton was looking for in that answer.
The choice of verb is what I am obsessed with the most. Resonate. How does that resonate in the bedroom? Like, resonate means, for lack of a better term, vibrate. Why are you making that connect?
I think you're making that connect.
What resonate means? that choice of her, and she keeps saying it over and over again, and I feel kind of bad for her that she's like trying to voice it in a different way, and everyone is just giggling like they're a classroom full of like 10-year-olds, like, oh my god, she said a swear.
Mm-hmm.
I think Jay's like, I don't know what's going on, and then Jeff to just be like, Parvati, do you know what's going on? You clear this up for me?
Jury management, don't say no. Maybe that's the ultimate test as well. Like, I'm going to give you this complex riddle. You know, if you translate it, then you'll get my vote. But don't say that you can't, otherwise you won't.
Yeah, this is a good. We talked about like the test that you have to figure out with Courtney. Yeah, what does Natalie want? What does she want out of this? conversation.
Yeah.
This is the only Survivor jury question that could also be asked on Let's Make a Date. You know, like it has so much, for lack of a better term, resonance across many different types of shows. Mm-hmm. I can imagine this being asked during the rose ceremony on The Bachelor.
All right. So I like the sort of dichotomy of that. Okay, Parvati, how does your social game or your flirt game correlate to the bedroom? And also, Amanda, what's it like being a zombie?
Yeah, exactly. Amanda, you're dead inside.
Mm-hmm. What's it like for you? Yeah. okay. All right. So
how does being a zombie resonate in the bedroom?
Let's look at the board. All right. Is this Ratchet?
I'm going to throw something out there. This is top tier in my opinion.
This is worth playing for.
Whoa.
This is iconic in so many ways. And it's never been asked afterwards, right? It's entirely completely unique because it is bonkers.
Yeah.
And it's Natalie Bolton's arguably the most memorable thing she does in her Survivor career.
Mike, would it have been for you a good sort of like a completion of the circle if Parvati would have asked Tony of Tony, could you tell us how does your game translate to life in the bedroom? Oh my God, are you kidding me?
Yeah,
I got a spy bed. I get under the bed. I'm hiding. I wait for my wife to come in.
Tony would not like do an army. Be like, all right, let me map out a game plan for you. There's a spy bed, and under the spy bed, there's a lot of stuff under there. Bag of tricks.
We got a resonator.
Are you vibrating?
Yeah.
Yeah, like that. I would have loved that though. Parvati's like, you know,
let me tell you about my bag of tricks. Yeah.
34 seasons ago, Natalie Bolton asked me this question, and so I'm gonna ask this to you. And then what is Michelle Fitzgerald look over at Wendell like, don't you say a thing.
Yeah. All right. So
top tier.
Top tier. That's high. It is memorable. It's memorable.
Yeah, I mean, Grace, like, I'm just going to ask, like, is it going to get better than this?
You'd have made the list, so you would know. Grace, tell me, how do you feel about all this?
It's certainly memorable. It's certainly like entertaining television. I don't really have a problem with where it is. I don't know if I would have put it in the top tier, but I can see why it's in the top tier, I will say.
Okay. I do think it's certainly more memorable than Greg Pick a Number and Lex. So it is the second most memorable on the board. I'm not mad at it. Yeah, I probably wouldn't have had it that high, but here it is.
Yeah, I think we gotta fill up the top tier a little bit. We know that Sue is unquestionably the number one, but let's give her some company with the vultures.
Okay. All right. So, Michael, where are we going next?
Well, we're staying in season 16 because, speaking of bedroom resonance, we're going to talk about Ozzy. Ozzy has some very not so kind words for Parvati and some very surprisingly kind words for Zombie herself.
By the way, do we have any sort of sense how Ozzy's game resonates to the bedroom? Do we have any insight into this?
I believe that's beyond the paywall, Rob.
Okay.
I think subscribers might be able to let us know that. All right. So let's hear from Ozzy here. And perhaps, I mean, we're talking monologues here. This might rival Snakes and Rats for something I would say at my college audition process.
I think I might be the biggest idiot up here. I am truly, to the bottom of my heart, hurt by what you did to me. It was a great move. It really was. But I never in a million years thought that you could do that to me. You put a price on our friendship. You threw us away like garbage. You basically said, you know what? You're not quite worth this much money. It really does hurt. And how can you say that you're a role model when you're willing to discard a valuable friendship like that? A human being, but I don't want words. No words at all. I don't want to talk to you. And honestly, the hardest part for me was the fact that you took away 14 days that I could have spent with Amanda. Amanda.
it.
When I told you on the beach at one point when you asked me if I was playing you or not, I told you honestly that I'm not faking it. I'm not faking my feelings for you or anything. No. I really am having feelings that I've never really felt before and have never... I honestly feel like I started to fall in love with you. And I don't know, you're just an amazing girl, and I really want everybody to know that. And I'm glad I didn't win Cook Island so that I could be here and have met you.
Huh. Thank you.
And that's it.
Yeah, that's a good turn.
The music is like music for me. Yeah. Just when it drops out and he goes like, the only thing I regret is you didn't give me 14 days with my zombie. And then like the music, the swelling music comes in. I love all the sighs. The sighs are what do it for me. Like the, oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
I love you, Amanda Kimmel.
Yeah. Didn't work out. Spoiler alert.
No.
Did not work out at all.
Did not work out for much longer.
Spoiler alert,
that.
He was not falling in love with her.
Right. I mean, I think he was, but I think this is for, you know, for Ozzy, live hard, love hard, play hard. I think that he's sort of like in the moment he was feeling it.
Speaking of which, unfortunately, Zoe's work hard, play hard story space did not make it into this iteration. But yeah, this is really like a tale of two cities, right? This is not like, oh, I hate you and I expected more from you. This is, I hate you and I love the hell out of you, Amanda.
Yeah.
This is the opposite of the strategy we've been talking about. Whereas,
opposite
of
the DLB. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the opposite.
So, Jared in the chat says this. Mike, can you verify this, or is Jared making a joke? That Jared claims Parvati has said that since he didn't want her to speak, he asked her to answer with an interpretive dance.
The best jokes are often probably a little bit in reality. I don't think this is true, but couldn't you imagine Ozzy doing, especially like Game Changers era Ozzy, right? He'd be like, this dance is a microcosm of what your game is like. So do a little bit of a dance. Maybe I'll fill in some imagery that Natalie was talking about beforehand in the bedroom, and maybe I'll give you my vote then.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So... yeah, this is pretty wild. It's Jared says he has no idea if that's true, but she, Parvati, has said it. I'm not sure if that's if we ever interview Parvati again, we'll ask her that question.
If through interpretive dance, you're going to be interviewed.
Yes. Okay. All right. So Ozzy's big speech. Don't like Parvati. Love Amanda. Okay. This is a tough one.
This is a real, because it really is two different speeches crammed into one.
Yep. I think it's better than Lisi.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely passes the water shoe line.
Okay. Is it in the right tier, first of all?
See, I personally really love this one. This has always been one of my favorites because it really does seem like a terrible acting exercise, and the fact that he made this like his final jury speech just makes it even better. So I personally would put it higher, but I also know that that's unrealistic, probably.
Grace, how are you feeling about this?
I could put it higher than where it is right now. I don't know if it gets out of this tier, but it's probably the best one out of this tier.
Yeah,
I think.
You think it could be the top of this tier?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's definitely, if we're talking about angry jury speeches, it's definitely more epic than Eliza and Helen, right? They did not declare their loves to Chris and Brian, respectively. Mm-hmm. So Ozzy definitely has dimensions. I think the question is, like, do we like the simple comedy of Heidi more than we like the just comedy and drama mask that is Ozzy's Night at the Theater?
Mm. Okay. I'm good with that here. Top of Ain't No Hershey Bar, just ahead of Heidi.
Yeah, I think that's good.
Okay. All right. Tonsters in the chest says, would have been more memorable if they got married. If this was a proposal, where would it go? Would it be worth playing for?
Oh, I mean, yeah, this would be. That's the only jury segment that would have had a proposal in it from what we know so far.
So far. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So, Mike, what's next from Micronesia?
All right. Well, we're going to the next season. You all were waiting for it. Here we go. This is Corinne Kaplan talking to, I put the final three, because she really has stuff to say to each one of the three finalists in Survivor Gabon. You either love it, or you hate it, or you love to hate it. Here is Corinne's very memorable words to the final three.
Susie, I have one question for you. And if you can answer yes to this question, I will give you my $1 million vote. If you get the money, will you agree to have your vocal cords removed?
No, because I am a talker. Sorry.
Okay, thank you. Bob, I adore you. You know that. The only qualm I have about voting for you, you are somewhat one-dimensional. I've already met Nice Bob and I've played with Nice Bob, and tonight I want to see Nasty Bob. Make me believe that you don't like sugar.
I can stand up and say that sugar did things that I didn't like. When I blindsided Randy with my fake idol, I didn't feel good about that, but I felt horrible the way sugar stuck it in his face afterwards. But in the last couple of days...
Don't get nice. I don't relate well to nice people. Stay nasty.
I'm done.
I'll take that. Sugar, you are an unemployed, uneducated leech on society. And the only thing I would vote to give you is a handful of antidepressants so that no one else has to be subjected to your constant crying anymore. And maybe if you got some, then it would seem a little more sincere when you are crying about your dead father. You don't deserve the million. Thank you, everyone.
There we go.
Yeah.
Rumor has it if Susie got her vocal cords out, she would have done the rest of the jury answering in interpretive dance.
Imagine Mama Susie.
Yeah.
Well, she agreed to it. Do you think Corinne would be like, well, Marcus is a doctor. Can we do the surgery right here, right now?
Let's do it. Yeah right now.
Well, Corinne's a surgeon here, carving up the final three. She comes in with a plan. Unlike Lisi, she executes on it. Very OTT.
Extremely. Some would argue, and we have a couple again to sort of match up with this, but maybe one of the most brutal jury speeches, which matches up considering that for a while she was brought in for the brutal cast assessments. When you think Corinne, you think brutality.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, Grace, what's your reaction?
It's so mean. I don't know. It's so unnecessary to do it. So I don't love it. I don't love the being like, again, the like Sue stuff, it's mean, but it's, I mean, maybe some
that's a roast. Like that's a roast. The sugar stuff turns out to just be like a bad burn.
It's tough. It's tough.
You know,
to
Susie's laughing watch. During the vocal cord question.
Yeah, I was going to say,
yeah,
like,
that's fine. Yeah.
I mean, I think so. I am OK on this for most of it, because I think the Susie vocal cord thing is actually really funny. Yeah. Right? Like, it's a joke. Susie gets it. She laughs at it and sort of like rebuffs it. The Bob thing is fine. It's a little insistent of like, I like being mean, so Bob, you need to be mean. And even Bob's like, I can't really be mean.
It's fine.
There's been other jury speeches of the like, you know, give me the yes or no, like sort of like do what I tell you right now, and then like I'll vote for you. Basically,
right. Yeah. So that's the brain enhanced Albert, yes or no, yes or no, not that thing.
Yeah,
like we've seen that before. That's not bad. And even she's like, when he's like, okay, I'm just gonna stop, and she's like, I'll take it. Like it's fine. It's so fine up until.
But going back to the Courtney Merritt thing, like I do like that. It's almost like, you know, each juror is like 1 point, and if you can solve. Mm-hmm. That juror's riddle, you get the point. So if Corinne is saying like, hey, my thing is I want to see you be mean, so you know, be mean, Bob, you know, I think that that's okay. She has set the hurdle and you have to clear it. So I do like that in terms of like you know, each person having their own mechanism for how they're going to grade this thing.
True, though. I also think to that point, though, Corinne's not exactly reinventing the wheel here, because I think we have had people say many times like, say something mean about your opponent.
That was my jury question.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's just something with Bob of like, Bob, you're so nice. Say something mean about sugar. But for me, this really slides with the sugar thing. It just seems way too personal, way too ugly for me to get enjoyment out of it. I can certainly understand why people would say like, yes, drag her, you know, so mean, so biting. But that, I think, just sort of really veered into territory for me that was just like not very fun to watch at all.
It goes back to the thing of like that we want, like at least we sort of want it to all be wrapped up in the show. And this is such a clear moment where Corinne takes a step outside of the show.
I don't think these two speak to this. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
I would not think so.
Okay. Yeah. So, all right, Mike, I feel like that it should be high up. I feel like you're saying that maybe it crosses the top tier.
I mean, yeah, I personally would put it in the bottom tier, but this is also not my personal thing. Like, I think it should be top tier from like a pure memorability and speech perspective. Mm-hmm. Just from my own personal, like, if you were showing me, hey, watch these 20 jury videos, jury speech videos, I'm going to save Corinne for the bottom or maybe not watch it at all because I don't want to particularly like to watch someone saying, you know, take antidepressants so you forget about your dad's death.
Mm-hmm. Grace, how do you feel about this?
I mean, so again, it's like have we really settled on like what the...
We never do. We usually figure out the criteria by the end of it.
So like, I think like, honestly, like, yeah, if you pulled up a YouTube video that was like, here are the, you know, 20 top ones, it's going to be in there. Yep. But I think there's something to be said about like, actually like where we are culturally as well, that like, if I made that YouTube video, I don't think I would leave it out because... it's just so it's so over the line, but I don't know. I don't know where Rob, where do you think it should go? I don't know.
I think it should go pretty high up on the list that I think we could say like, okay, that was not great. She should not have said that, but it was also, I think, one of the things that made it very memorable that she did say that. So we're not condoning what she said, but I think that I don't know if we can erase it.
I mean, you could argue it's this speech that gets her invited to Survivor Caramel.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
So if you want to dock her worth playing for, I could see it, but I feel like it should be in My Life is Fine.
I would put her up in worth playing for. I think I think to Grace's point, I think this is an incredibly memorable speech. I just might put my own personal biases in and like just stick it always at the bottom end of worth
playing
for. Mike
doesn't like that kind of talk, everybody, all right?
Yeah, exactly. Listen, and we're going to get to that in a little bit with the choice that was sort of added in last minute. I'm not a big fan of the ugly jury speeches, but I can appreciate it for what it is, and that's why it's in a top spot here.
Yeah. So, all right, but it's behind the Natalie resonate in the bedroom, right?
Yeah, I enjoy Natalie's infinitely more, and it is also more unique than Corinne's question here, which isn't really a question.
Okay. All right.
Oh, she does ask Susie. She asks Susie.
Oh, that's true. I wrote more of a rhetorical question because I think it was sort of a lose-lose for Susie. Either she loses her vocal cords or she loses the money.
Mm-hmm.
She almost won the money. Maybe she should have got a vocal cord. You know?
Mm-hmm. All right. So, Mike, what's next?
Let's go to Survivor Samoa, the final jury speech of Survivor Samoa. We got to talk about Eric Cardona's plea, not to the final three, but really to the jury.
I'm going to try to keep this brief, but I don't need anything from any of you. Mick. Day one, they put a leadership necklace around your neck. I go 39 days struggling to find a reason that you deserve that title. You did nothing. You did nothing with your team. You did nothing to encourage them. Nobody on that team had any guts. You're responsible for that. Russell, this hurts me. We had nothing in common. You played an unethical game. Admittedly played an unethical game. The crazy thing about it is you're sitting there. I'm standing here. Did you get to the right place by behaving the wrong way? I've never been in a situation in my entire life where that was the case. But you sit there proud of it. Natalie, people will call you weak. People will say that you're undeserving. But you know what? Why are those characteristics any less admirable as lying, cheating, and stealing? Why does he get a free pass, but your wrong way of playing is admonished? If there's one thing that I learned in this game, it is that perception is not reality. Reality is reality, and you are sitting there, and that makes you just as dangerous as any one of those guys there. You would say that you were probably the least deserving of the title of Soul Survivor. But maybe, just maybe, in an environment filled with arrogance, delusional entitlement, maybe the person who thinks that she's least deserving is probably the most.
Oh.
You got my vote. I hope you get four more. Congratulations.
So, I mean, spoiler alert, Natalie does get six more, actually, and ends up winning.
This is sort of like the argument that happens a lot on Kid Nation of it's like, all right, who do you think should get the gold star? Russell's like, I should get the gold star this week. Natalie's like, oh, I should give it go to somebody who's deserving. And like, see, she didn't pick herself. See, this is why she should get the gold star.
Yes, and Eric certainly has, I think, the passion of a child, which makes sense because I think he's the first juror, right, who is like brimming, just watching every tribal council happen from then on out. I mean, Eric himself is such an interesting character, and I think one of the more forgotten ones of Survivor Samoa, but he is pretty OTT at some points. He's pretty OTT here when he goes with, Russell, we had nothing, and he's gesticulating with making eye contact. But this is an extremely memorable jury statement in that we're going to get into a few of these, but this really is like the first one proper where it's a direct address to the jury itself and not even to the finalists, and essentially making a stump speech for one of the finalists as to why they should win.
I think I remembered it more that he speaks to the jury more. I think I remembered it. He doesn't really, like, he does. It's clear that the intention of his speech is to try to convince them that, you know, Natalie is the one deserving of the win, but it's not like he like turns to them and it is like, I need to speak to you. I think we've seen that since. Yeah. It's a very interesting speech. He sort of does it in sort of trying to tell this like passionate story about why Mick is entitled and why Russell is arrogant and why Natalie should win. It's really interesting.
Yeah. I think it's remembered quite a bit for one being the first of its kind in sort of the stump speech to the jury. But two, also because that Natalie wins in what is still considered to be like a big upset. People did not see the Natalie win coming. And I think that people probably look at this as like, oh, maybe this is what swung the jury.
Yeah. I mean, well, apparently, according to like AMAs, you know, I think the consensus was that the galoos were set on voting for Mick. Or like whichever one of Mick and Natalie like pitched themselves better. And then once they saw that Mick with his fecklessness was starting to sort of bungle the questions, then, you know, Eric really brought it home for Natalie being like, well, actually, I think Natalie's sort of like sobriety and lack of ability to really talk up her stuff. Like, let's not admonish her game because of that. In fact, she should be celebrated for it.
Okay. All right. This will be an interesting one to place. Let's look at the board.
Yeah.
All right. So this is not Forget You, Go Home, Goodbye, right?
No.
Okay.
It's got, I don't know, I feel like the sort of like the pick a number question, I feel like the importance of it puts it in My Life Is Fine for me.
Okay. Is it ahead of Lex?
No. I think that I enjoy watching Lex's more. I think the passion behind Lex, I think, beats out Eric's, you know, more so speech to nine people instead of three.
See, now I'm wondering, should Lex be ahead of Greg and then sort of like, you know, first of its kind, be together in My Life Is Fine?
Yeah, that makes sense.
What do you think, Mike?
So essentially it would be like people who ask the like trendsetters, essentially.
Yes, somebody who sort of like broke the mold with a jury question.
Yeah, I'd be fine switching Lex and you know, Greg as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But this is very fluid. This is very fluid. Okay.
Yeah. I like this where it is. And we're going to see. There are going to be many copycats of this, but like, there's almost no beating the original. And I would be surprised if any of the other, what you call a half Murphy, ends up beating out the original and Eric Cardona just because of how epic it was.
Yeah.
I think it's got two things going for it. It works, first of all. And the loser of the vote is one of the most famous, basically, losers runner up of all time. Okay. So I think in that sense, it's pretty memorable.
Great. All right. Let's see. What do we have next, Mike, from Samoa?
Well, we mentioned the half Murphy. Let's go to the eponymous man proper. Rob, you just talked about him last week.
Yeah.
We're talking about David Murphy here.
Mm-hmm.
So for those that need a reminder, basically take the same speech that was just said, eliminate the word Natalie and insert the word Rob, and you get pretty much what David Murphy says right here in Survivor Redemption Island.
And now for something completely different. I'm not going to ask you guys any questions. I'm not even going to talk to you. I'm going to talk to them. There's really only one logical decision here. Well, one person doesn't deserve it, so we can cut him off. The other one thanked somebody for doing it all. Who'd she thank? The guy sitting in the middle. He did everything.
And most importantly, he managed to blindside Matt. And in the process of doing that, he sent a message to his tribe that if any of you show any signs not being loyal, you're going to go home. He controlled all of you. He controlled your minds. He controlled what you did. He controlled your thoughts. You all bought it. And one by one by one, all of you were blindsided. A little ruthless, but brilliant. When we started this game, two people came in. One of them claimed to be the best to ever play the game. He walked out on day 8. There's a guy sitting over there that just played the best strategic game this game has ever seen. And it's pretty damn easy to tell you who deserves to get your vote tonight.
Something I noticed this time, I didn't remember the Haunted Mansion music that played behind Taylor Murphy's speech.
Yeah.
You know, maybe he's a ghost.
So I just watched that whole Tribal Council last week when we talked about the 39th best season of Survivor. You know, yeah, it's fine, David Murphy. It's just that, you know, Philip and Natalie, like, are beaten up through that entire final Tribal Council. Like, he comes in and it's like the score is already like, 72-3 to zero.
He should be invoking the mercy rule, but instead he's like, all right, I'm batting cleanup. Let's dig in on these people.
Yeah. Yeah. And so David Murphy throughout the whole season, like from the merge on, like he's very much sort of like a little bit of like a, Rob is, well, he's such a strategic genius. I don't know if he thought the producers want to hear that or what. I don't know who he was necessarily making the case to, but
yeah, that's what I was going to say. It's so silly. He's like he had this reputation. I think you were talking about this of like being this like super smart guy, David. And he's like, I got it figured out. Like Rob played the best game. Like, I figured it out. I got him. And it's like, yeah, we all knew like in the last piece where we saw with Eric, it's like, I think, yeah, there probably were people who are like, should I vote for Mick or should I vote for Natalie?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I'll vote for Natalie.
Yeah.
And this is everybody's voting for Rob. I'm like, yeah, we're voting for Rob, David. Like, yeah, we already know that.
Get with the program.
Yeah.
Yeah.
David Murphy wasn't exactly coming in to win the 2021 hot takeoff with this one.
No, this is definitively very, very cold, as cold as the night in Nicaragua. Yeah, and I think, you know, what also doesn't help is I feel like the content itself, especially coming right after Eric's, is fine. There's nothing as memorable as Eric's, you know, like we had nothing, or you know, his words about maybe the person who feels like it's the least deserving is actually the most deserving. Like there's no hook to David's speech here.
Right. This would be like coming in like, listen, Philip, he played the best game that all of you wanted him out from day one, but look at him, he's still there. Like that would have been something. That would have been closer to the Eric Cardona. This was, you know, basically to say the guy who was obviously the person who was running everything was actually running everything.
So that being said, I think this is bottom tier.
Oh, you think it's forget you go home. Goodbye.
I think especially compared to everything else we faced, this is the biggest nothing burger speech we've had so far.
Okay. Now, interestingly, we'd probably talk about it more than the Eric Cardona because it came in conjunction with the engagement, which I can play again for you if you'd like.
Oh, I'd love to, please. I want to love.
Do I need to? Hold on. Do I need to torture the listeners again with this?
Yeah, you know what? Let's do it. We're not out of the woods with Redemption Island yet.
Grace, you okay with that? I want to make sure that everybody is on board with this before I play it.
Do you want me to veto it? No, it's okay. We can play it.
Okay. All right. So here is David Murphy's even more famous speech from that night.
And I heard a rumor that I'd like to investigate quickly that there is another love affair. The Survivor has blossomed yet another love affair. And typically at Tribal Council, I would just go digging until I found it. But since it's love, and love is tender and beautiful, David, why don't you just tell me about this? Is it true? Are you dating another Survivor?
I am. Not a current cast member. It's a former cast member. And we met shortly after the season finished up. And
who
we
is
got
it?
Back. It's Carolina who's sitting right over here in the second
row. Carolina Eastwood from Token Cheese.
That's correct. That's correct.
Was it love at first sight?
I don't know that I would go so far as to say love at first sight. She kind of put me in my place a few times before she actually gave me the time of day. But eventually she came around and was kind enough to give me a little attention.
By the way, Ozzy doing much better with his speech for Amanda Kimmel than David Murphy is doing here.
I could have gotten 39 more days with Carolina, who wasn't even on my season.
And how is the relationship going now?
You know, it's going very well. Things are going pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Definitely. All right. Anything? Really? Is there anything else you'd like to tell us, David?
Intent?
Yeah. I think David was probably trying to get at, like yeah, he was throwing ixnay on the proposal, FJ.
He's trying to, like, throw the ring in the fire.
Jeff's like pretty good. You said you were going to propose to him before. Yeah, is it going all right? Pretty good? All right.
Hey, Jeff, I think we got to get to the local news.
Oh, wait, who won the Sprint fan favorite? Didn't you say that, Jeff?
Yeah. Anything good coming up in season 23 that we should look at, Jeff? Like, you turn it around back on him.
All right.
Wait a second. How well is it going?
It's going very well.
Like, he does not want this.
No, he doesn't.
He's trying to vamp right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, very well as in, gee, I'd like to maybe really make this official?
Yeah, I think that's kind of the good idea right now.
Yeah, I mean, that's basically what he wanted. Like, Jeff is like, all right, David, is there anything that you'd like to say to the jury? You know, like, gee, let's make this final tribal council official.
Yeah, you know, that's a pretty good idea.
I wish David kept saying no. And then Jeff is like, you don't want to, like, will you marry him, Carolyn? Like, just like making him.
It's like if you're in a game and you keep mashing the no option, they just keep repeating the dialogue until you eventually say yes.
Mm-hmm. I think he wanted Jeff to propose to her on behalf of him.
Yeah. Caroline is like,
that blows.
Oh boy. All right. Well, now hopefully Mary Kukowski does not have another fit listening to or maybe like the all force. Right, so, she's just feeling it.
Well, let's just talk this through. So this is worse than Lisi.
Lisi at least has a lolliness to it, you know? Like, I laugh at the weirdness of Lisi's. David, I feel nothing with David. We have nothing.
Grace, how do you feel about David?
I feel like where Mike is like, yeah, it's memorable in the sense that it gets referenced a lot. But do you think that's like almost more of like a
that it was
a
so
Rob
bad.
Has a podcast thing? Yeah. And that it's really bad.
Yeah.
And we're only getting like half of the full.
But this is worse than Lisi. Talk me through that.
I don't think it's worse than Lisi.
I think Lisi's is more memorable because there's more humor stuff to it, right? Nobody's ever asked somebody how many zeros are in $1 million. People have said all the time in a more exciting fashion than David, vote for this person.
Let me make the case for David being above Lisi, because that David came up with a dumb idea or dumb plan and he went out and executed. Like Boston Rob didn't lose because of his thing. That Lisi comes out and she tries to do something and like falls flat on her face with what she's attempting to do.
That was an earlier challenge, Rob.
Yeah. She's like, all right, I'm going to come out here. I'm going to own Cassandra on the water shoes. I'm going to totally dunk on Dreams. He's not going to know. And she just like completely whiffs on what she's trying to do.
So then why do we pride Heidi for doing that and we chide Lisi for doing that, you know?
I don't know, because it's so self, like Heidi's is so self-deprecating in a sense. Like the humor is like Heidi.
It's deprecating. I don't know if it's self-deprecating.
Well, like
it's second person deprecating.
Yeah, sure. Whereas Lisi is just like really trying. Like, Heidi isn't trying to be mean to anybody. Heidi is trying to get people to compliment herself. Mm-hmm. Whereas Lisi is trying to set other people up to fail.
Mm-hmm.
Is the difference there.
What do you think, Grace?
Well, I'd put David above Lisi.
All right, I'll be outvoted here. I'm fine putting David above. But I do we agree it should be in the bottom tier?
I could see the argument. I probably wouldn't have had it on in the bottom tier because I think of it so often of like we talk about like, oh, is this the half Murphy? Is this the full Murphy? It comes up every year for me.
Right. But I was going to say, like, I think if we rank this in terms of like RHAP's, you know, supremacy, then yeah, it would probably be the top of this.
On the RHAP wiki, it has its own entry.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Like full and half Murphy, that's only like half of... Like it's the speed. It's really the proposal that you're like, wow, I went full Murphy, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's true. Actually, yeah, I think the more memorable part of David Murphy the person is by far the proposal than the speech.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
I probably would have had it higher too, but I'm willing that if we bumped it above Lisi as a compromise, it can stay on the last.
Got it.
The last year.
All right, let's keep going. Mike, do you want to make a speech about David Murphy and how bad his thing was?
No, I don't think there are no Zapatero members for me to address at this point, so okay. It would feel faulty.
All right.
All right. Well, to quote David, though, And now for something completely different. This was one I had no memory of until I sort of pulled the Patrons of Rob Has a Podcast to give it some examples here, and I found some online. Kat Ederson had a very surprisingly un-Kat Ederson jury question in Survivor One World. Now, look, I don't expect this to do particularly well, but I thought I would sort of uncover this gem of Kat Ederson's jury speech that I know I personally didn't remember, and I feel like a lot of people didn't. So this is going to be extremely different from any other jury speech that we're going to be talking about tonight. It is not mean. It is not funny. But here's what Kat had to say in Survivor One World.
Well, hello, ladies.
Hi.
Being voted out, I was really, really upset. All three of you hurt me very, very badly. And Kim, girl, I am just destroyed by you. What I kind of want to say, though, is that I have a secret, and I want to tell you guys. You know, when I was little, I went through two open heart surgeries when I was 12 years old. And in order for me to have kids, I have to have another open heart surgery in 12 years, which means 22, baby. So I'll be going next year and I'm doing it again. So I had to hide that from you guys because I didn't want to show you that weakness. But that's why I don't have time to be angry with you three. So I'm going to base my decision on who I feel played the best game to you guys. Take the time that you have and live it for the best that you can. And this decision that you're going to make, don't base it on being angry. I was so angry for what they did because I want to sit there. I want that one anything. And I would die to be there. But it takes a lot more energy to be angry about what happened in this game. And it's a lot easier to smile and to forgive and be happy. So that's what I'm going to say. I forgive you. And that's all I have to say.
Thanks, Kat.
Okay, well, that was a little bit of a blindside, because when I saw in our show notes that we were talking about, Kat talks about her surgery, that was not the one that I thought we were going to mention.
No, this is very top heavy, but more in the heart region than the other region. Yeah, I mean, this blew me away when I saw it because this is Kat Ederson. Kat Ederson, who forgot that a BLT has bacon in it. Kat Ederson, who thought she contracted appendicitis from Colton because it was contagious. Kat Ederson, who greets her cousin by getting down on all four legs and barks like a dog. Kat Ederson comes out with like this beautiful speech about take the time that you have because you might not have a lot of time left. Like, it is so against her character that it really just strikes you.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know what to do with this.
I think it's going to be bottom tier, but I think it's just, I wanted to put it in here because it is just so.
But it's not ratchet. Put it at the bottom of Ain't No Hershey Bar.
I would personally be fine with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Grace, any other thoughts on this?
No, this is, I mean, it's sort of the thing that happens in Survivor is that there's a reason why we all sort of watch the show. And then every once in a while, you get this really striking, powerful moment is one of the you get blindsided in a sense. It's a very nice speech. It's beautiful. What a message.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Mike, where do you want to go from here?
Well, first off, I hope she was able to find someone who was able to date someone who made the merge and was fine having kids with someone who, you know, had to have multiple open heart surgeries as well. There's a lot of lists to get through when it comes to dating Kat Ederson.
But she's doing fine.
She's doing great. She's doing great. We're going to move into the very next season here. And people feel free to, you know, strap in for this one because this is going to be a long one. The longest clip we have tonight. Jonathan Penner, in his final Survivor outing to date, addresses all three members of the jury in a true Penner-like poetic digging fashion. And we are going to play the full thing here.
Guys, hi. Congratulations. Obviously, we all wish we were sitting there. As Jeff says, is there some vestige of fury? Of course there is. How can there help but be? We've all given our hearts and souls to this game. Some of us, a tremendous amount of heart and soul. And to see anyone but ourselves sitting there looking at anyone else is painful. That said,
You have my heartfelt congratulations. I know what's going on tonight is hard. Smart people asking tough questions. I will hope to continue that tradition. Denise, we've had a lot of time together. I'm a little confused by some of what you said tonight. Appeasing is what happened. You shared with me once that the one thing that you were sort of afraid of being seen as was a bitch. You can rest assured that you have now shown the world that side. Scooping. You're sitting here telling us how your name kept coming up and how you were threatened all the time. I don't think your name, and you guys will correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think your name has been written down one time in this entire game. I have the proud distinction of having my name written down, I believe, 15 times. Which may be a record. No, I think Philip Shepard has more times, but I may have close to a record. 15 times my name is written down. So I know that you're sitting here saying that there was this big target on your back, but however you scrambled or dissembled, backstabbed, and flip-flopped, you were able to avoid having your name written down even once. You may find that you have a perfect record even after tonight. Lisa, my friend, we got close out here. We both know that we did. Would you like to share with everybody, or shall I?
Either one. I'll be happy to, because
No, I don't want to shame you, certainly.
Well, it's not a shame.
No, of course not. You should be proud. Lisa was a television star. Spent 9 years on the television program The Facts of Life. From the age of 12 to the age of 21, she was America's sweetheart, still may be. You guys deserve to know that when you vote or don't vote for her, that she has kept that from all of you, and I kept your secret safe until now.
Can I ask you a question?
Anything you want.
Did you reveal to any of us what you did as a teenager, what job you had as a teenager like 25 years ago? Or did you talk more about who you are now, what you've been doing, and what you bring to the game now?
I didn't talk about when I went to the bathroom 16 days ago. There's a lot of things that I didn't talk about either. My life, would you really like to hear now? Should we take the time and I can talk about what I did when I was 12 to 21? If you guys are interested, I don't think it's going to affect the outcome tonight. Maybe later I'll tell you all about it. I think that one of you has ridden the other two in like oxen. You have been yoked to a cart and have been ridden in, and now you will be led to the slaughter. And you hear the cheering. You think the $1 million is yours. One of you is right. One of you is standing in the chariot. And the other two are actually just the oxen listening to the crowd, cheering for the person who touched you. I'm done.
I love this in so many ways. I will say, Jonathan, I think, gets things a little muddled at the end with this image of, so you're in a chariot that's being pulled by oxen to a slaughterhouse?
Yeah. I mean,
they all cheer when you come into the slaughterhouse.
Yeah.
The meat is here. The meat.
Maybe Jonathan Penner is a longtime fan of the game, The Oregon Trail. And you do need oxen. Can you eat the oxen?
Exactly. Like, you wouldn't be able to ford the river.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Penner is always good in this spot. He's good in Cook Islands, that he ends up like really reading Ozzy to filth in Survivor Cook Islands. He says, "Ozzy, to me, you were like a prince." He really gives it to Ozzy back then. And we've talked a lot about Ozzy here tonight. Could have used some reading scooping to filth also, Grace.
Yeah, I think maybe when
in hindsight, maybe went a little light.
Yeah, maybe even like he votes for Denise, I think, at the end here.
And yes.
He ends up kind of insults her there. Yeah. And I think that the whole like so as some, you know, outing Lisa's story, like it was just like, I don't want to out you, but like before that, he's just like, you have a secret. Do you want me to tell you?
Yeah, exactly. Nothing?
Like, I don't want to reveal your secret,
but there is a debilitating secret.
You have a secret.
These sound editors have a field day and a half with this, right? Like, if you drink every time there's a rattlesnake noise in this 3.5 minute speech, you'll be Big Tom at the Africa Final Tribal Council. They use it so much, especially like right after, like, she's a television star. like, that is the big revelation that from 12 to 21, she was on The Facts of Life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know if anybody on the jury watched that show or knew what that was, but
how dare you? Carter Williams is a devout fan of all things Nick at Night.
There's that. I remember I did watch it because someone suggested it to me, and I didn't really remember the Oxen speech. And you watch the video when he says, like, she was on a show called The Facts of Life, and then I think it pans to Malcolm, and he's kind of like, oh, that's interesting. Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like there's a groundbreaking thing. I feel like anyway.
Yeah. So
if he's uncovering things from the final three's past, I think he could have maybe directed it like one space to the left or right, and it maybe would have hit a bit better in retrospect.
Okay. So if we're going to talk about this, like the highlights of this speech, Mike, what in your mind makes this speech stand out?
I mean, the Oxen one is great. If you're talking about imagery, that's like a big concluding thing at the end, like, right? Like, we love poetry of like, you think that you're standing in the chariot, but really you are that stupid ox who's about to get slaughtered. There's also some fun stuff like him sort of like pulling his own survivor fact check in the middle of his speech by being like, I think I have the most votes against me. Do I need to access Survivor Wiki on the island? Is that a thing? I think it's just a really fun, like, again, this is the last thing Jonathan Penner does in Survivor up to this point. I think it's a fantastic culmination of who he is as a character. He has a lot to say. He tries to be biting, and he ends with a very vivid image.
Okay. I don't know if it gets like cut out, but I think the other thing that is really well done with this speech is he votes for Denise and Denise wins. And that's who he's talking, like, he's talking about the person who wins, right? And so it's a good, like, it's like, you know, in the same way where Sue is like, if she had said like, and the snake will eat the rat, and then like the rat wins, it's not as powerful as like as, from a story perspective. And in this, he's thinking like, Denise is in the chariot, Scoopin' and Lisa are the oxen.
You're right.
And that's the story that you get. That's what happens. If he wasn't right about it, it might not be as memorable, but he is right.
So I think that the Eric Cardona thing is really powerful. In Survivor 19, like, I think that the Survivor producers felt like, okay, we need a person who really is going to make the case. This is why this person won.
We need the concluding paragraph person, the one that can step forward and be like, because that's what I believe. So Eric was last.
Yeah.
David was last.
Who's going to give the sermon tonight?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, who's bringing it home?
So, okay, David Murphy does that in Redemption Island. But I think Penner, even though he does ask Lisa a question about the facts of life, he's kind of the person who does bring home the sermon for Denise to win. And so it's very powerful.
Yeah, I think it's great.
Okay.
Yeah, and again, it's...
And then he doesn't say it, too. And whether they edit it out or not is the thing that I really like, because I understand, like, who is that person? Who does he think?
Who is the chariot?
Who is the chariot?
Oh, I can't wait for Survivor Chariots versus Oxen.
All right. So, Penner is not Forget You Go Home Goodbye. All right. Is he In My Life Is Fine, or is he somewhere in Ain't No Hershey Bar?
That's what I'm really, like, I think he's either bottom My Life Is Fine or in the top of Ain't No Hershey Bar, personally.
Grace, how do you feel?
Yeah, that's sort of the debate I was going, because it's definitely better than Ozzy's speech. And I think Eric's
Ozzy,
is better.
You are like a prince. You are below. You're below me.
I think Eric's is better in the sense that, again, it's like a convincing. Mm-hmm. It's like the convincingness of it. Whereas Penner is just from like a storytelling perspective, like watching Survivor. It's a really good final jury speech.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I think it's not as impactful as the Eric one, but it's Eric-like, adds his own flair to it. So I'm fine with him being next to Eric Cardona.
Yeah, you could say he's a storyteller, you could say.
Yeah.
But he does. So if we're ranking now, we're sort of now sort of tiering also like Survivor stump speeches. It looks like Eric 1, Penner 2, David 3 at the moment.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. All right. Let's go, Mike. What do you got next?
Let's rip off this Band-Aid. We've popularly requested. Let's get into Brenda and Dawn in Survivor Karamoan.
Okay, here we go.
Dawn, you know how strong the bond that I thought I had with you was. It was so strong. Getting voted out by you, I mean, Cochran and Sherry did it too, but by you, that's where the pain came.
Let's take it back a little bit. That day,
yeah,
when we heard shrieks coming from the jungle, it was you. And I saw you in your the most vulnerable state ever. Mm-hmm. When you were like, Brenda, I'm going to pull myself from the game if I don't get my retainer back.
Yeah.
And I said, no. No. I said, you're staying in this game, Dawn. Mm-hmm. It happened perfectly where I was able to find it for you, give it to you. You were so grateful. You said, I owe you everything. Mm-hmm. Because of you, Brenda, I'm in this game. I realized afterwards, I had Dawn's fate in the game literally in my hands. Mm-hmm. Tell me, would you really have given it up if you didn't have your teeth back? Something cosmetic. Would you have quit this game if I did not give you back your teeth?
No, I wouldn't have.
I need you to go beyond words this time, and I need you to prove it to me. I want everyone to see you the way I saw you that day. I want you to take out your teeth, Dawn.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that.
I want you to do that.
I don't understand how that...
Dawn, it's my thing. I know it's harsh.
It's my thing.
Okay, I'll tell you.
We all have a thing.
I'm not understanding how you're not. And let me explain it. I had your fate in my hand that day.
Okay.
And you're telling me, no, you didn't, Brenda. I would have stayed. It really wasn't a big deal. If you're telling me that, yes, Brenda, I would have stayed in the game. I'm strong. I'm a fighter. Then prove it to me right now.
If you're asking me to take him out and, like, humiliate myself, I'm happy to do that. Because truthfully.
Let's do it.
I will do it.
Let's do it.
I really will. But truthfully, all I wanted to do in this game was play hard.
Let's do it.
I'm willing to take anyone out when I want to play
the whole point
of the
game.
Anyone.
The whole point of my thing right now is...
I'm happy to do it.
No talking. Let's do
it. I'm happy to do it. There. There they are.
Okay. Thank you. I did not want you to minimize what I did. That's why I did that right now. I wanted you to feel that because it's kind of what I felt.
I understand.
A little bit of heartbreak.
Okay.
Okay. All right. I just love that. No, this is my thing. This is my thing. No, I ask people to take their teeth.
We all know my thing is that I get people to take their teeth out. Yeah. That's my thing. Come on.
I'm Brenda the teeth taker.
Yes. Come on. Brenda, you asked this woman to take her teeth out. You vote for her now. Come on.
Yeah, you have
Come
to
on.
Vote for her.
Right, so that's the thing is almost the opposite of what Grace said was so great about Penners. Brenda does not vote for Dawn and neither does anybody.
You asked. She did what you wanted. Come on.
She did your thing. The test. She passed the test.
She passed your test. You said take
nobody
your teeth
else
out.
Took their teeth out. Nobody else took their teeth out for you, Brenda.
This would be like if Susie took her vocal cords out and then Corinne didn't vote for her.
Like, I don't think so.
Doesn't deserve it. I changed my mind. It's so bad. It's so bad. Vote for her. Give her a vote. It's fine.
Come on. Come on, Brenda.
It's this was so
that's
this is
low.
It's that's low, Brenda low. Low with the E. it's awkward, it's ugly, it's random, because this is almost like the Natalie Bolton edit on steroids, in that Brenda was not visible at all except for that teeth scene and when she got voted out, and now she's just coming in with full ferocity. It is tough to watch, it is tough to listen to. The question is, it is incredibly memorable. How high does it put it?
I mean, this is really like, I think Brenda sort of coming out of Nicaragua, people were like, she has to come back. When is she going to come back? And she comes back and she's so invisible in this season. And how much of it, I think some people think that this is sort of why that she just was so unnecessarily mean in this moment.
Yeah. I don't know. I've heard different stories about like, she had a boyfriend, she like missed her boyfriend. I'm not sure exactly what what the issue was. But here she was, in a pretty good spot. And then she gets blindsided and, she comes in real hot at that final tribal council. Mike, I know you've, watched, Survivor Nicaragua for the historians. Have you got up to the finale yet?
Not yet. No, but I don't recall her being as nearly angry as she was in this one, because she got to the final six, she got further than she did last time, and she this is the whole thing where like Dawn took her on that family visit that ended up not being a family visit, and then Dawn betrayed her, and it's very clear that she is particularly visceral towards Dawn.
I believe the story was that she won a family visit and then she got to pick one person to go with her.
And then they brought it.
Well, actually, hold on a second. Hold that thought. We have a second loved one. And now if you give up your your visit with Dawn, then everybody else is going to get their family visit. And then she picked the one for everybody else. And then Dawn lost it. And then she was stuck with Dawn for the whole day. And then Dawn flipped on her.
And then as a revenge, Brenda told her to take out her teeth. And Brenda ends up finishing second in the fan favorite vote. So clearly that move sort of has an influence. But I don't know if the fan vote was conducted after the finale. I do not know if she makes second place anymore.
She was certainly not. There's also she helps Dawn find her teeth. She has this lovely edit. And then it's just at the last minute, she's like, mm-hmm. yeah. I don't know.
And then she's not at the finale because she is very pregnant at the finale mm-hmm. of Survivor.
She was doing the Survivor 40 finale before they did of the Zoom finale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So let's see. Mike, I feel you want to say this is Ratchet, right?
I mean, no, I personally think it's Ratchet. I'm chomping at the bit to say it's Ratchet. I just feel bad. I feel really bad for Dawn mm-hmm. just over the course of that final tribal council, and especially this, that she has to do this and show what she feels is she's very, vulnerable about, quite literally, to Brenda, only to have Brenda not vote for her in the end. But this is an incredibly memorable speech, arguably one of the most memorable parts of Survivor Karamoan. And mm-hmm. so I gotta feel like it's gotta be at least pretty high here.
Okay. What do you think, Grace?
I agree that it should be fairly high up. It feels weird to put it in a category called My Life is Fine, because I'm not fine with the fact that it happened. Mm-hmm. And worth playing for, I don't think so. But it should be pretty high, I think. So I don't know if it gets slotted in at the top of Ain't No Hershey Bar, or whether that's still too low for it.
I might put it below Lex in My Life is Fine, because I feel like I like Lex better. Not only would I rather, do I actually, am I actually able to stomach Lex's speech more so than Brenda's? But I do feel like Brenda's vitriol and memorability does supersede, the random aspect of Greg's question, and then the proto stumpiness of Eric's question, and then the linguistics of Penner's question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it sort of lumps it all to, if you kind of go, the end of Worth Playing For is Corinne's pretty mean speech, Lex being fired up about the relationship with Rob, and then Brenda, those sort of have a thematic line through them, sort of where they're sitting.
Yeah. This is really tough. I mean, she comes in with a plan. She executes on her plan. She does not give Dawn the vote. It's also piling on Dawn when, mm-hmm. in the same way that David Murphy, came in to sort of dunk on Philip and Natalie also. She's not pro-Cochran. She's just anti-Dawn. But it is very, very memorable.
Lisa, if you want to learn how to embarrass someone, take, some lessons at Brenda's school.
Mm-hmm.
Take off Cassandra, your water shoes.
Yeah, take off your shoes. Take off your shoes. Show everybody. Hold them up.
That's my thing. This is my thing.
I'm not taking off my shoes. Do it. I'll help you find them. Remember
it's
that day?
Thing. It's yeah. my thing.
This is my thing.
Take off your shoes.
Cassandra, this is my thing.
Okay. All right. All right, let's look at Brenda is right now the top five baby and second in My Life is Fine.
Well, speaking of top five, baby, let's go to Survivor Cagayan, because we've got a couple here. And let's go back to the well of the stumpers. Let's start with the young lad himself. Let's talk about Spencer Bledsoe, because Spencer does have a question to Wu. But I think what we more so remember him for is not only him talking up Tony's game, but particularly, I think, what he compares Wu to mm-hmm. in comparison to Tony.
Yeah.
Let's do this. All right. Woo, when I look at your game, I can't help but make this comparison between your strategic play and the behavior of a dog. I mean, Tony was like your master. When he said sit, you sat. When he said the word, you went and played fetch. The LJ vote, the Jeffra blindside, even in camp life, you were in his pocket 24/7. When it came down to you having an opportunity to take one of the biggest goats in Survivor history to the end, you did what a good dog would do and stayed loyal to your owner. And is there anything you can say to me to convince me that this analogy doesn't make sense?
For someone like you who's been a student of the game, someone who appreciates the game, can you respect me if I took a goat like Cass to the finals?
Yes. As a student of the game, I would expect you to take a goat to the finals.
But for me, I'm a different student, I guess. I wanted to take someone who deserved to go.
Okay.
Thanks. Tony, I don't need to ask you any questions. I need to talk to you all. Love him or hate him, Tony played his ass off out here. Wu tries to excuse his passive play on not having idols and Tony finding three idols. Why do you think Tony found three idols? It's because he looked more than everyone else combined. Tony was behind every great strategic decision. He blinded his alliance to what was going on around them in the game, like a puppet master. He took a slew of goats deep, put some on the jury. He took one to the end. Tony played with a ferocity this game very rarely does see. And so when you put pen to parchment tonight, vote for the only guy sitting there that actually played this game and played it in a way that honors it. Congratulations, you two. 39 days out here isn't easy. Thanks.
Thanks, Spencer.
All right.
There's Spencer.
A man and his dog.
So to me, I feel like this is actually, you know, very similar to the David Murphy speech. It's probably a little bit better than David Murphy in that he actually has a question for Wu.
The dog comparison is a little more creative, I think.
A little more creative. I don't love comparing Wu to a dog, but at least it was something.
My favorite part of that is when Wu asks, like, if, you know, would you respect me if I just took a goat? And I was like, yeah. He's like, well, I'm a different student than you, man. Like, mm-hmm. I go to a different school, man. You don't know.
Yeah.
Man.
Also,
you
Final know. Tribal Council Wu sounds like he's an SNL host reading off a cue card at certain points.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. I feel like this is got to be next to David Murphy. I would say probably one spot ahead of David Murphy, but I don't agree. Know how you can argue it should be anywhere else but there.
I completely agree. Again, I think that the creativity of the dog comparison ekes out just a little bit, but it's very much the same tone, especially that final thing, right? It's like, this guy played an incredible game, vote for them, when, again, this was sort of a foregone conclusion anyway. Nobody was really wavering between Wu and Tony, it seemed, especially when Spencer came around. So I'm fine putting him right here. My life is fine with Spencer right here.
It's interesting. I wonder how much, like, I've heard, you know, you hear about the juries very early on in Survivor that they were sort of like, don't talk about anything. Don't talk about your vote. I don't know how much that is the case in these modern seasons. And I just wonder, like it seems so silly that Dave, I mean, in retrospect, I mean, I guess we did just see Russell, like, you know, how many seasons are we off of, like, sort of Russell losing at the end, people sort of feeling, and I think Rob is so different than Russell in how he played that game, but maybe that's where sort of where David Murphy is, that sentiment is coming, like, I have to stump for him or he might get, you know, be the victim of a bitter jury. And whether that's happening here, like, I can sort of feel like when I look at, like, a David speech, you're like, that seems ridiculous that people weren't going to vote for Rob. Like, of course they were going to vote for Rob. But here, I do wonder, because Tony flipped back and forth, whereas Rob was like, this is my group and we're just going to get rid of you. Mm-hmm. And then when it got tight, that's when he's worried about losing those votes. Whereas Tony went back and forth so much that I could see that Spencer would be like, yeah, he might, like, people might not like him and might vote against him. And how much was happening at Ponderosa for Spencer to, like, think that might happen, and therefore I need to do a jury speech about it. I just don't know how much they talk at Ponderosa about how they're going to vote.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the stump speech in general, just because I think, to your point, Rob, one of the things that I love about Survivor juries that make them always so complicated is the fact that each person has a different piece of criteria, or should, to vote for someone. I don't love a juror coming forward and being like, you should vote for this person because of this reason. You know, everyone has a different reason for why they want to vote for someone. For someone to come forward and be like, this is the blanket objective reason why you should cast their votes for them. Like, it's not very fun.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that we talk about, like, okay, this shift from, like, season 19 on with Eric Cardona, where I feel like that was, like, the beginning of the slow march towards the new jury format of that I no longer have questions for the people that are up there. I'm now persuading the other jurors of, like, how they should vote.
Yeah, it's like, oh, now we're going to have an open table format where the finalists are in the room and can occasionally butt in. But mostly it's going to be us talking amongst ourselves about the virtues of people's games.
It's also a mentality of switching from, like, I get to make a decision. I get to make a vote about, like, now it's my turn, to, like, oh, we have to make a decision. Like, we have to we have to pick who wins.
Yeah, it's like, almost like a court jury, right? Of like, oh, we need to all leave the room with a consensus. We can't be a hung jury.
That's the future of the jury. It has to be a unanimous decision. They deliberate for days.
I mean, a lot of times it is.
I know.
Yeah. Like, I mean, can't you see the beauty of what Wu was doing out there, everybody? I mean, Tony was doing this, but we, you know, everybody's just trying to like make the case for somebody as opposed to actually like, no, tell me. We're getting fewer of the, you know, apologize. My question is an apology.
Yeah, I mean, and to that point, I think it's showing why after Eric Cardona, it sort of is diminishing returns. And the fact that of these clones so far, Jonathan Penner is the one that only comes close. And it's because it's Jonathan Penner. He's able to like inject his own amount of personality into it. I don't think that David and Spencer are really, they're very much speaking from like the, we are super fans and we value the strategy of the game. And therefore, this is how you should vote. Right. I think Penner is coming at it more from like an emotional, you know, almost like gladiatorial angle.
Okay. All right, yeah. So that's where Spencer is. But Mike, let's stay in Survivor Kageon.
Oh, yeah, you made a very good assumption about that because we cannot talk these jury speeches. If we're talking about passion and we are talking about emotion and we are talking about calling jurors out or finalists out for what they did, Trish had a lot to say after Tony betrayed her. I sort of yada yada through. She asked a question to Wu about, like, were you in on the plan to blindside me? He says yes. She sort of, like, shrugs him off. But I think the thing we most remember her for is her sublime question and speech to Tony.
Tony, when I first showed up, you and I, first day, became the best of buddies. And we were on the bottom of the alliance, instant friends. And you know what? We started to share intimate stories. Now you sit here now, and you would not be sitting there if I didn't have a big part in it. Because nobody here ever for 1 second trusted you. They trusted me. And I had to convince them all to trust me, to trust you. And I spent the entire game putting out little flames for Tony. So you could sit there. And you came to me in your paranoia and you said, I'm telling you, man, something's going wrong here. I said, Tony, take a chill pill, relax. I'm here for you. I'm never gonna leave you. And you said, I need to know that for a fact. I said, well, don't be swearing on your mother and your kid. You've already done that for everybody else. Find something different. And you looked right at me and you said to me, I will swear on my father's grave. I've lost two siblings. And those two losses have put two holes in my heart that could never, ever be repaired. I would never, ever, ever have gone back on the promise of my brothers. Not today, not tomorrow, not for $100 million, not for anything. I have $1 million question for you that I want you to answer to your mother, to your wife, Marissa, to your daughter, Anastasia. Was it worth it to you for $1 million to sacrifice your own father to get you here? Was that worth it to you?
Trish, I was outnumbered when Wu came up to me. He had Spencer, he had Tosh.
I asked you a question. I don't want excuses. I'm saying to you, heart to heart, friend to friend, human being to human being, answer the question. Is it worth it to you to be here to play a game for $1 million on your father's soul and memory? Yes or no? It's $1 million question.
Yes.
Thank you.
And he got it right. Yeah. She votes for him.
Yeah. That's great. That's very powerful.
Yeah. Hot to hot.
Yeah.
Hot to hot.
Yeah.
I mean, it is incredibly powerful. It has just it's purely driven by just adrenaline and passion and emotion. You can tell that Tony hurt Trish deeply, specifically in going back on his word on his father's grave. Because again, talking about what you were talking about before, Grace, like that's something that Trish personally wouldn't do. So to have Tony break that vow means the world to her.
Yeah.
And I love the interrogation. And like, it's $1 million question, yes or no. And when his feet are pressed to the fire, he says yes in true Tony fashion. And he ends up prevailing because of it.
To me, this is the most evocative of the Lex speech that is sort of like this is thematically the same question of that there was something that I was not willing to do. Our relationship was one thing. I would not have betrayed that. You obviously would. Is there anything that is not out of bounds for you?
Yeah. And it's very much so like the like bitter juror, like you hurt me as well. Right. So it really has like all the makings of a great jury speech as well. Like Trish's delivery is so good. This does read like a dramatic monologue, you know, like you are just reading someone for filth, someone who
on the witness stand,
who you've had such an entrenched friendship with and you feel so gutted by. So that being said, this is number two for me.
Number two overall.
I think this is the best speech we've ever had since Sue's speech.
Yeah, I think that there's a case to be made for that in the sense that I think if season one of Survivor is Kalyan, imagine that timeline.
Mm-hmm. For many people it is, if they're watching it on Netflix.
True, if you're following the Shannon Gus web. If this is the first season, Trish's speech is in the history. It's the same as it's Sue's, maybe with a touch less like of the perfect metaphor.
It's
for
the
like
hot to hot speech.
But it's exactly. It would be known as something. And I think the like instead of the snakes and rats like capper, in this one you have the like, is it worth it to you? And Tony saying, yeah. Like that to me, that's like the like it's such a good it builds.
Yeah.
And then Tony's like, yeah, it's worth it. And that's the moment. Like it's really,
the
really
moment.
Good.
The moment.
Yeah.
Should she have asked, is it worth the greenbacks for you?
Yeah. Should she have said, is it worth it? Let me work it. Flip this question and reverse it. And then do her entire speech backwards.
In an interpretive dance. Yeah.
Trishy Elliott.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I don't know if I would have had it in that too, but I like the reasoning.
Yeah, I mean, I think it really does have like everything. It has sort of like the emotion of Lex, the vitriol of Corinne, the sort of like, I think the interesting wordiness and some WTF-ness of Natalie's book. Cause I don't think we ever saw, did we ever see Tony actually make the deal as well? So like that comes out of nowhere as well. I think it's just a really perfect mix. The only reason why Sue supersedes it is because like it is the OG and it has transcended the show.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, it's great. I think Trish's too, is that it's not very, like when I talked about being mean, it's not mean. She's angry. She's definitely angry, but it's like you hurt me, and like this is why. And again, it's like that pressure valve moment of like this is the first time I get to talk to you since you voted me out, thing too. So it's really great.
Yeah, and unlike someone like Corinne or Brendan, it's not like you hurt me, and so I'm going to embarrass you. It's more so like you hurt me, and I want to let you know that, which is another reason why Sue's is great as well.
And also, I'm going to vote for you. Like it's wild. Yeah.
All right, Mike, what do we have after Trish?
Two left. And of course, we are going to a Biggin as well. We're going to the very next season. Here
what are
comes,
you, Al Bundy?
Yeah, didn't you realize?
Mm-hmm.
I pull off my mask. I'm Ed O'Neill the entire time. Explain a lot of stuff. So very next season, Reed Kelly has a lot of stuff to say, particularly to Missy. Let's hear a fairy tale from Reed Kelly, shall we, from Survivor San Juan del Sur.
Yes.
Ladies, just a few things before we close tonight. Nat, I just have to say that I loved watching your gameplay. It was dynamic, at times a little spastic. I thought you made some really great choices, so I just wanted to say congrats. It's awesome. Jacqueline, you're another person that I really enjoyed getting to know about here, and it was so funny because I never really felt like we could get our plan to converge together, but that didn't stop me from trying with you and still having a good time trying to play the game. It was nice to get to play with you, but I do look forward to, you know, hanging out with you afterwards. Missy, you cast yourself as the motherly figure. However, fans of classic literary fiction will see through very quickly to who your true character was, which is the wicked stepmother, really, of the tribe. It's the eccentric woman who comes in and makes demands of everyone for the things to which she feels so entitled. You know, she spoils her children by perhaps giving them more rice at dinner or the best places to sleep at night in the shelter. She takes things that she's either not entitled to or didn't earn herself, which was always evidenced by the fact that you got more guineas in this game than anyone and performed the worst out of anyone at challenges. Lastly, you made the quintessential wicked stepmother move by abusing the help, which in this case was the minority alliances throughout the game. You always made sure they felt inferior. You always kept them in their place. And you always made it eminently clear that they weren't coming to the ball that is the tribal council here this evening with you. So that to me feels like your fatal flaw in your whole plan, because unlike life, in the game of Survivor, the outcasts are the one who get the final say. So in a sweeping moment of poetic justice, the people to which you were so rude and terrible to before relegating them to the jury with the help of your alliance are going to decide your fate this evening. This is why I love fairy tales, because they always have a happy ending and the wicked stepmother never wins. Matt, Franklin, good luck.
A burn.
Yeah, burning like a wicked stepmother upon the flames.
Yes. Shout out to all the fans of classic literary fiction listening tonight.
Yeah, exactly. I think a lot of people are like, oh my God, finally someone's speaking up. They take their noses up from their Grimm's fairy tales to be like, oh, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. Is there a Survivor fan on here who enjoys classical literary fiction as much as I do?
Mm-hmm. Stephen Fishback was like, yes.
Finally, now I can say my poetry on the show if I ever come back.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So
I said I liked a metaphor earlier.
I mean, this is literally just one giant metaphor, right?
Yeah. Like,
it's very clear, and Reed is a performer, so it makes sense. This is very much planned out. Like, he's got the whole structure to it. And I give him a lot of kudos for, like, he sort of does the, if this is true, then what else is true? Especially the whole thing of, like, you vote people out, so you're not sending them to the ball, which was the final tribal council. Like, all the analogies seem to scan, which might not happen other times when you're thinking off the top of your head. This speech has gotten some pushback, though, from being a bit too planned out. So I guess that's one of the big questions, you know.
It does go on for a while.
And it does go on for, it's 2.5 minutes, and there's a lot in there as well.
Yeah. Grace, how do you feel about this one?
It's fine. It's all right. It's like, it's trying to be Suhawk. I think when we talked about there being imitators, it's a bit Suhawk-ish. But it's just not, it doesn't have as much of a punch to it, I feel. I mean, it is, I don't know. It's interesting when there's like, you know, when we talk about the stump speech or sort of the like trying to eviscerate someone. It's interesting in a three-person format to just totally go in on one person.
Right. You know, I'm trying to see on our board right now of, you know, the Suhawk speech is sort of really coming down hard on one person in the final two. We have then Trish is coming down hard on somebody in a final two. Natalie's really talking up somebody in a final two and really coming down on somebody in a final two. Corinne is sort of like a pox on all your houses.
Yeah, she's an equal opportunity offender.
Yeah. This is interesting. This is really, I think, one of the only ones that's, I guess, Brenda also. Really, I'm going to single out and zoom in on one person in a final three.
Right, even Penner, right, was sort of in the similar mood of, like, let me roast everybody.
Yeah.
It feels like it's been, and maybe Ozzy was sort of like roast one as well, but yeah, not a lot of people say, here's a final three, let me zone in specifically on one person and just trash them.
Especially because it's just like, again, I think it's in the same mold of, like, David Murphy, whereas, like, Rob's going to win. Like, with anybody being like, well, I was going to vote for Missy, but Reed's story, I don't think I'm going to vote for her anymore. And then you just kind of like the other two are like, yeah, you guys are great. If one of you will win, that's fine.
Mike,
you know, whatever.
Well, could Reed have maybe combined a couple of the speeches that we've talked about here tonight and maybe taken some of what Brenda did and some of what Lisi did and said, Missy, stand up and take your cast off.
Yeah, exactly. We know.
Show us your crutches.
You survived after breaking your leg during a challenge. We want to see how much you can survive. Hobble around the set. Do a lap, James Clement style. Let's see how your running is.
Yeah.
I forgot that she is in crutches, and he's like, everything was just given to you. Like, like it's not the most. Like, you picked a target that's not the most. Like, you know, she's gonna get some sympathy, I think. Mm. Sorry, I cut you off there, Rob.
If we're talking about how the voting sort of pairs with this, Reed institutes some strategic voting as well, where, you know, he knows that Baylor's going to vote for Missy. He knows that John is going to vote for Jacqueline. So specifically to deny Missy runner-up money, he votes purposely for who he knows won't win in Jacqueline just so Missy comes in third.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Where do we place Reed?
It's such a good question, because I think it's like from a writing perspective.
From a classic literary fiction perspective.
I appreciate it because I'm a fan in that regard. He speaks to me. But like, I don't know if I enjoy it as much as some of those ones from the top two tiers.
Okay. Yeah, I think at the very, I think that he, at the very least, he's behind Penner. So how far does he fall? Is he better than Ozzy?
What do you think, Chris?
I don't know. Ozzy's is really, it's, I mean, not intentionally, but it's so funny.
Okay.
Like, I hate you, I love you.
Grace, let me ask you this. Which is the sicker burn? Wicked Stepmother or DLB?
DLB is, again, I don't really love being mean, but DLB is better, I think. Yeah.
DLB is better. What do you think, Mike?
I was fine keeping him in My Life Is Fine because I feel like it's incredibly memorable. I think certainly probably more memorable.
It has a theme.
Yeah, and I think it's more memorable overall. It's cohesive than like what Ozzy did. But I'm fine keeping it at the bottom of My Life Is Fine. Because again, I think you look at any of those other five, I'd much rather... Again, it was good. It was a good performance of Reed. It's not as iconic, I think, as maybe those ones that are ahead of him.
I know that there's a lot like before Penner gets to the oxen, but kind of like there's this like mythical story of like who's the oxen and who's on the carriage. And I can see how that sort of fits in.
Yeah, with, Reed could use an editor.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe Penner could have helped.
Yeah. All right. So, last one, Mike. Tell us about the final jury performance.
So, we are finishing with this season where we were sort of like within the final few seasons before we knew it that the old Tribal Council format would be going away. We're going to the very next season, Survivor Worlds Apart. And we're going to kind of finish where we started with Shireen in more ways than one. And she'll go into that in a little bit. She does talk a little bit. She has a very emotional segment where she talks about like how Mike really helped her on that particular day. But I think she is more memorably known for how she closes out her speech.
This is about Mike's game. It's about Carolyn's game. It's about Will's game. And I see a huge parallel between ton of animals that we lived out here with day to day and each of these players. Mike is like a howler monkey. He's loud, he comes at you, and if you threaten a howler monkey, he will throw feces in your face and he will rip you apart limb from limb because he voted every single one of you out except for me. And you have Carolyn. Carolyn is the stingray. Hidden, doesn't want to make waves. If she senses anything near her at all that threatens her, she will sting you and she will sting you dead. And you are out of this game. Unlike Mike, Carolyn was on the winning side of every vote on this jury, including me. And she's the only person with that unique distinction. And you've got Will. Will is the dead fish that we dragged in with our nets. We were stoked. We willingly bit into dead fish. But if you bite into the dead fish, he will poison you from within. Almost every single one of you wanted to take Will to the end. He didn't have to make any alliance. He's a dead fish. Eyes are glazed over. Do what you want with me. And that was his poison. Please look at the gameplay. Aggressive, stealthy.
Dead fish.
And with that, I will quote Sue Hawk from her final Tribal Council speech in the very first season of Survivor. When we all go to vote, let it be the way that Mother Nature intended.
Hey. Now, to be fair to Sue, Shireen's food web makes less sense. Was it like the monkey eats the stingray, eats the fish?
I don't remember that food chain.
Yes. But, have to check with Sangmin and see if that's exactly how the food chain plays out.
And the lion.
Yeah. So, all right. But Mike, well done in terms of bookending this thing.
Yeah, that ended up actually turning out extremely well. So I was very happy that it ended up coming full circle, that Shireen ends up invoking the very first person we talk about here.
Yeah. Okay. So, Grace, how do you feel about this?
I like it. I think it's a good one. I think, I mean, again, we talked about like going in on one person. We just talked about it. That is like an interesting thing to do. She does do that, and she doesn't. I think she stumps a little bit harder for Mike than she does for Mama C.
Especially before the part that I didn't play is like, yeah, her being like, Mike really saved me on that day. She does say, though, that doesn't count you out, though, Carolyn, because you have a really good game. And so that's mm-hmm. why I think she really wants to send it here like, okay, we really need to focus on the game and let me do so by comparing them to the animals around us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like it. I like a metaphor. So I think this is a good one. It's great.
I do love also the connection to like old school Kim Sprodlin identifying everybody as animals. Mm-hmm. It's definitely not snakes and rats. I'm sure the island was more populated by things than howler monkeys, stingrays, and dead fish, but very creative on Shireen's part to do that sorting.
She's also like, she gets like fascinated by the howler. Is it howler monkeys? Yeah. She gets fascinated by monkeys.
One having sex.
Yeah. So, you know, it's fitting for Shireen to use that one.
So she goes more scatological than sexual in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mike gets mad and throws his feces.
Yes. So she doesn't really break any new ground here, though. No. So this is memorable, not groundbreaking.
Yeah, I would agree. It's something that is sort of like formula creating. It was more so like a fun callback. I mean, listen, it was Survivor's 30th season. I know it's just its 30th
just
season.
It
was its 30th season. I think that was also a very fun callback as well to the very first season that was the reason why, you know, Shireen and a lot of these players were there today.
Yeah. Well, it's not forget you go home goodbye.
I agree with that.
Okay. Is it Ain't No Hershey Bar?
Yeah, I would say so. Yeah, because I don't think it's as epic as the ones from My Life is Fine above.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Is it at the top of Ain't No Hershey Bar? Is it closer to the top or the bottom of Ain't No Hershey Bar, Grace?
I think it's closer to the bottom because the way that I sort of view this week, like I think I was a little bit lower on reads than I think you two ended up being. I think it's sort of the same thing as, you know, it's, again, it's this argument of like, who are you convincing with this argument? I think it's mm-hmm. fun. I think it's well, it's like, well, like it's better than some of the other ones we've seen, but it's also like, yeah, well, I wasn't going to vote for Will. Like who, you know, one person votes for Will, don't they? Yeah. Ronnie
does.
But like who, nobody was voting for Will. Mm-hmm. So like, it's like, what argument was she making in the same way that when Spencer and David Murphy are like, got to vote for Tony or Ron.
Right.
So I, that's sort of where I envision, I could see it being a bit higher, but that's
yeah. I think it's a bit higher. I like it more than Cat.
Certainly.
I don't know if I like it more than the WTF-ness of Courtney Merritt.
I think it's better than Courtney Merritt.
All right. I'll drop that into the sea of forgiveness then. I like it better than Helen's because it's more creative than Helen's. Do we put it side by side with the other animal question?
Yeah, the other one that had, you know, butts and animal butts. So. Mm-hmm. Fitting. Yeah.
Okay. Grace, how do you feel about this year?
Yeah, I think it's pretty good. I mean, certainly everybody's going to have their own little like, oh, this would be a little bit higher. This would be a little bit lower. But
are we in the ballpark?
Well, wait, and we can do a little bit of an audit here at the end because I think I have a couple of things. Yeah. Things I might want to switch around.
All right, we'll take it away, Mike.
Now that I think about it, if we're looking at legacy more, I would definitely put Eric above Greg in My Life is Fine.
Okay, Eric above Greg. Okay.
Yeah, because I think, again, if we're talking about like the legacy of it, considering that Eric's has spawned so many children that we see in this rankings, I do feel like, and it is entertaining enough that I feel like it does sort of beat like the short but funniness of Pick a Number.
Grace, any objections?
No objections. I think that makes perfect sense.
All right. What else, Mike?
I'm trying to look here if there is really anything else. I can't really quibble with much else. I really like this, the Mount Rushmore of Sue, Trish, Natalie Bolton, and Corinne.
Yeah. Are women better final tribal council performers in terms of questioning the jurors?
Well, I think that when we look at like final tribal council questions, the ones that really stick out are the ones that are like the most biting and arguably sassy.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think a lot of female survivor contestants like have an ability to deliver like a very clippy, you know, biting yet still sort of light soundbite. And I think, you know, a lot of the people on this board were able to do so.
It's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
A lot of pointing going on in the final tribal.
Yes. Any other adjustments we want to make before we start to look at like the final standings here?
I think this looks
so
good.
Yeah,
to
let's
me.
Talk it through. So forget you go home goodbye right now. Starts with Spencer, then David Murphy, and then Lisi is at the bottom. Grace, how is that feeling?
Feels good. Feels great. Yeah, water shoes and how many zeros? At least he gets a big fat zero.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, how many zeros in her position?
Okay.
Yeah, a lot.
All right. So now we have on Ain't No Hershey Bar. Let me talk it through, and then I'll tell you some of my feelings here. We start with Ozzy. Then Ozzy talking up, down to Parvati and up to Amanda. We have Heidi. Is there anybody else? We have Eliza calls both Twyla and Chris, both DLBs. Mm-hmm. Big Tom wants to know, a hyena?
When the hyena eats the mush and then licks his butt, was it to animal instinct or to get the taste of mush out of his mouth?
Shireen calls Will Sims too, a dead fish. Helen says, ate too brute to Brian. Then Brooke Clay probably would have been a good shipping name for Brian and Clay.
Yeah, all the people that were surely shipping the two of them they really lost out on that opportunity.
Mm-hmm. And then we have our this wild one from how would we describe this again?
The Sea of Forgiveness. Drop my guns in the Sea of Forgiveness, chips on my shoulder, I'm a bird, I gotta fly,
et cetera. From Courtney Merritt, and then Kat Ederson has a very heartfelt, literally and figuratively, speech.
All right, so what are your thoughts, Rob? You said you had a couple of ideas.
Well, I think that Heidi's isn't really a speech.
So does that disqualify it?
I feel like it's more of a moment, and it's like less. It's like a not self-aware moment. I don't know if it's disqualified, but I don't know if I necessarily, like, everything else here is somebody coming up and saying something. You know, it's more like that this is Jeff's moment than the Heidi moment.
I don't know. I feel like Jeff has the punchline, but I feel like Heidi is the one that's really doing the joke.
Yeah. But she doesn't know she's doing a joke.
Yeah, and that makes it even better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's like, you know, sitcoms where, like, you know, the character doesn't know
that
they're making the joke.
I mean, I can live with it. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just looking at, like, I like it more than, like, Eliza's speech than Tom's question. I just like that moment more. Yes, it might not necessarily fit in with the other stuff that's going on around it, but it never was going to. So, you know, I'm personally fine with where it is.
Okay. All right. Then My Life is Fine. We start with Lex going off on Rob and Amber. Then we have Brenda, Dawn, take out your teeth. We have the Eric Cardona. We have Greg's pick a number. We have Penner saying that Denise is like an she's not an oxen. Scooping and Lisa are like ux. And then Reed calls Missy the wicked stepmother.
Grace, how do you feel about this order?
It's so hard. I don't know if Lex is at the top, but I don't know. This is where it gets hard in that the stuff that's like memorable isn't my favorite. I mean, there's a lot in the top two Corinne in the top. That's where the most memorable stuff isn't my favorite, but I get why it's there. So yeah, like Brenda, that's like such a mean moment, but it's so memorable.
The only one I maybe could be swayed is putting Reed above Penner, but otherwise I think this is fine right now.
Yeah. No way, Jose.
All right. So, well, I'm fine keeping it the six the way it is.
Okay. And then our top four from left to right, worth playing for. Sue Hawk is one. Look at Trish Hegarty, the number two best jury speech of all time. Then number three is Natalie Bolton, and number four was Corinne.
I like it.
Yeah.
I think it's great.
All right. There you go. That's our list. You can check
it out.
That's our list. If you're watching the YouTube video, it's up on the screen. There you go. Greatest jury questions of all time. Best jury questions of all time. All right. There you go. All right. What a ride.
Whoa.
We made it here. We did not dig into each other by the end of this.
No.
Hopefully the commenters did not dig into us like some jurors did.
We don't get to make a final jury speech?
No, one thing is clear. They need to bring this format back. And maybe this will also disincentivize maybe bringing back the Edge of Extinction, because you can't do it with 16 people. But it's shown over the years just how much fantastic TV content it has created. At least one moment a season really comes from a great jury question. And I think while we did try some stuff out with the new Tribal Council format, I think we're fine going back to the way it was before with each juror.
We're fine. I don't think it's going to happen, but I kind of feel like that if we were going to make a list, Mike, of the top moments that have come at Tribal Councils in the new format and take the Laurel Breaks the Top. That does not count. Tribal Council, final Tribal Council moments. Is there anything you could think of?
Chrissy going down the line and saying, like, Cole, this is what you got on your ACTs. Joe, this is the name of your children, is one. The theme is not on trial from Edge of Extinction. There was some stuff from the season 39 final Tribal Council that was funny, but not necessarily like iconic.
I can't even remember who it is. So it obviously is disqualifying. But isn't there one where like someone's giving an impassioned plea and then it just starts like raining on them?
In the Island of the Idols. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah. I mean, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's Dean, right? Is it Dean he's talking about? I mean, yeah. Whatever.
Okay. So. Yeah.
I mean, I think that like what's the incentive to move to this thing is, I think, making sure they have the right winner right winner is like subjective, I think, to like what Jeff Probst
thinks. That's the thing. It was that I believe the common logic is that after the controversial win of Michelle Fitzgerald and Survivor Co. Wrong, Jeff was sort of thinking like, okay, maybe we should have the jury talk to each other more about like what's the criteria for a winner of Survivor.
And I think what I was going to say is that like, isn't like Survivor should be begging for like, I mean, I know there's times where like they want someone specifically to win because it'll like sort of be good for the brand, but like a controversial win is not the worst thing, I think, for the show. Like, and I think like Rob, you're in the podcasting game, like if Gavin just wins Edge of Extinction, you're like, okay, Gavin won. Chris winning is like, oh, so much meat on the bone there. Like, what happened?
Walked into that.
Is a winner that's like, no, I mean, I think I used to be in the mindset when I was like obsessed over Survivor. I was like, this person has to win or it's a bad, like that's a bad outcome. Yeah. And I think that like we're seeing like in the Survivor rankings, there's so many seasons where the best player wins and it's a low ranked season. So like, I don't know. I it's interesting that they went to this thing of like, we have to make sure the best person wins, when I think the most interesting thing about Survivor sometimes is that's not what happens. The best person doesn't win.
Yeah. It really seems like that the Michelle versus Aubrey, that they felt like, even though there was a lot of conversation that came out of that of like who should have won, I think that they felt like that for whatever reason, that was a very unsatisfying outcome. They brought back Aubrey immediately. And said, you know, how do we change this up? But you tried something, but I feel like that overall, you've seen it over 6-7 seasons now. You're not getting a lot of juice out of this.
Yeah.
You know, you got a 5-5 tie in Ghost Island. All right. That's it. We've seen it. All right. Now let's go back to what's working.
But,
all right.
But even that's an anomaly. A tie happening is an anomaly because of the way that the format works. So. Just a shame. It's just like you look at all these memorable moments, and some of them are the most memorable moment of a season, and they're like, let's get rid of all of that. So I don't know.
Yeah. All right, Grace, thank you so much for joining us here on this. Thanks is our longest me. Outwit Outplay Outlist that we've done.
A lot of
just
video
keep getting longer.
A lot of jury speeches. Yes. Grace, where can people keep up with what you're doing?
You can follow me on Twitter at Hi From Grace, and you can check out my podcast Hold Up, which I do with another patron of Rob Has a Podcast, Hudson, at Hold Up Podcast with 1P, or anchor.fm/Hold Up. We look at old LGBTQ media and see if it holds up. So we just did our season 2 premiere. We dropped it last Sunday, and it was on an episode of Will and Grace featuring Matt Damon. So yeah, check it out.
Is that the one where Matt Damon pretends to be gay to get into the gay men's choir?
Yeah, he pretends to be gay. He's playing gay in the episode. So yeah, it's fun. It's good.
Okay. All right, Grace. So great to have you here on Outwit Outplay Outlist.
Thanks for having me. It's fun. Okay.
And Mike, what have you been up to?
Well, first, let me take a part of my plug to actually plug something that Grace is doing really awesomely in the post-show recaps Discord. Because you know I'm a person who loves Brant Steele. And what Grace is doing is she has the patrons of Rob Has a Pod, patrons of post-show recaps, sorry, draft characters from fictional TV shows into a Brant Steele and then plays out the Brant Steele and creates great like fan fiction-y write-ups for what happens in each episode. So we actually just concluded this season where patrons drafted characters from Game of Thrones, Lost, The Walking Dead, and Once Upon a Time. They all played together in Survivor Borneo. It was a really fun time, and Grace does a great job of not only cobbling together all these characters, but also building a really, really fun narrative, too, so that we make sense of all the shenanigans that are ensuing. So if people want to become a patron of Post-Show Recaps, that is one of the many incentives to do so. And Grace is doing an awesome job there. As for the stuff that I am doing, so of course, speaking of Post-Show Recaps, I'm doing Down the Hatch. I'm actually embarking on a new podcast project starting this Sunday that I've not announced on Rob Has a Podcast so far. I'm doing a podcast called The Bloom Files with my lovely wife, Angela Bloom. The X-Files is a show that she loves near and dear to her heart. I have never seen an episode. And so essentially what we're doing is we're going through a list of X-Files episodes, a la community building on post-show recaps. And I'm going to watch them for the first time. She's going to watch them for the umpteenth time. We're going to have a lot of fun talking about a series that is very weird, but very enjoyable and certainly a relic of the 90s. So our first episode is going to come up on Sunday, sort of explaining the process behind it. But I hope whether you are a newbie to the X-Files like me or an out-and-out veteran, I think you'll be able to enjoy it either way. So be sure to check that out, The Bloom Files.
Is X-Files streaming anywhere, Mike?
On Hulu.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so very easy to check it out, as well as several other services. And then over on RHAP Proppa, Shannon, Gus, and myself have just started talking Survivor in another capacity. We are going back to Survivor South Africa Season 5, Champions, and we are doing episodes two at a time. We just released our podcast covering the two-part premiere. It was a lot of fun. It is a very odd twist, but there's a lot of really exciting stuff going on with the contestants, and Shannon and I always have just a blast getting together, so we'll be doing that. And then, Rob, I'm going to be joining you and the great Phil Thompson covering Kid Nation.
Yes.
Which we mentioned a couple times coming up in a couple days. Then before you know it, Rob, a few weeks will pass and we're going to be back here covering Tough as Nails as well, in addition to, I'm assuming, some other Triple O nonsense, too.
Yeah, coming in February. All right. And of course, I'll be back on Wednesday night to talk about the 38th best Survivor season of all time. I'll be talking about Survivor Thailand as we are counting down the results of our fan poll, counting down the all-time top 40 season rankings of Survivor. So looking forward to that. Of course, over on the Rob Has a Podcast Patreon the other night, we did our second patron, Brant Steele, where Mike and I went through an entire Brant Steele season of a Frail Mary captain tribe versus a Jordan Kalish captain tribe with real-life patrons. Had a lot of fun on Friday night, and we'll be doing Patron Mafia this week. All that is available for you to check out at robswebsite.com/patron. Thank you so much for listening. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.